All right, so here's what I'm thinking is because the like flushed out palette of the Superman movie, the Man of Steel,
sure,
you know, and now they're all talking like, oh, he's gonna fight Batman, and it's gonna be a big thing. We're gonna bring Batman in, and he's gonna be dark and criminal, and people are gonna be suspicious. And he hasn't yet, like, you know, there's no reason for the people of Earth to trust Superman at this point. I'm thinking this is an alternate universe. He's not Superman. He's gonna be Ultraman.
They're not doing that.
And he's
they're
old. Not, I mean, come on, man. They're going to do is they're going to set up the Injustice League, and they go, fuck you, fanboy, but it's like a test of the waters.
There's no way.
Come
there's
on,
no way.
Man.
Because they haven't even really sold Superman yet. So
well, that's what I'm saying.
So his Ultra component.
They're going to sell the Ultra component.
To some guy in Duluth who's just turning this on.
Injustice League is basically Justice League beta.
You've made this way more complicated and too geeky.
It is not complicated at all. Okay, it's quite simple.
Did Bruce Timm ever do this?
Apparently you haven't drinking. Well, he brought the motherfuckers in.
Hey, guys. I'm actually already recording.
God damn it!
Hey, welcome to The Original Gentleman, episode 3.
Oh, wow. We're only at episode 3?
Don't make it sound that astounding.
Yeah, that's not much at all.
Fair, we have all been so busy and there's been so much going on. I'm kind of shocked that we've got 3 episodes in the can already at this point.
I am too, especially after you gallivanting about in San Diego for the last week.
By the way, I was going to quit doing this, but I had so many people come up to me at San Diego and say how much they love it. It's like... All right, fine.
Wait, you were going to quit doing this?
Oh, wait, no. Did I say that out loud?
You were supposed to save that for the point where I say beforehand, oh, by the way, I'm recording.
Oh.
Ixnay on the eating clay.
Sorry. Well, I'm here, though.
I would like to say that.
Wait. At San Diego, say, I'm a clay cake on K. People pay or...
Yeah.
We just came really? There and we really did. I had more than anything people coming up and going.
How did you even understand what I was saying?
I speak pig. The Latin had me a little confused, to be fair.
He's been described as a pig.
It's true. You are mostly made out of bacon.
I am a white guy, and to be fair, every time I see Martin, there's this little hidden urge that wants to throw him up against a car.
You give that back, you motherfucker!
It's one of those things where I go like, I smell bacon, but... Chris is usually eating that.
Yeah, or just, oh, sure. No, that's...
This is great. It's covered in chocolate. You should have some. Yeah. It's delicious.
Whenever Martin says, I smell bacon around me, I'm just, really? Is there one of those little boutiques that sells bacon? Maybe it's covered in chocolate. Wouldn't that be ironic?
That's the best. But no, we did. In fact, coming from San Diego Comic-Con, I got much more than reactions to Spill Stuff, which shocked me. People going... I really love, like, stuff going on oneofus.net. Like, people super excited about it. And then the occasional person going, what the hell is oneofus.net? I go, look at my t-shirt, motherfucker.
Maybe it's because we're not yelling at each other all the time now.
But, man, I gotta tell you, it just really cemented the fact that I love that we're doing this now.
Yeah.
That this is a thing.
Sure.
We've talked about it for months.
Whoa. Don't make it weird.
I'm sorry. But I don't want to. I know that this is still new and it's still like something that just happened, but would it be weird if I told you that I love you?
I'm not going to be the little spoon. It's not happening.
But anyway, yes, welcome to this new episode of this. We have a lot of stuff to talk about this week, as well as a full-on coverage of San Diego Comic-Con. Not the panels.
No, not the news
no.
you
not
read
the stuff
everywhere.
Everybody,
we will be bitching about that on full length in one of the Loose Cannon comics that's coming up. Though.
Yes,
so
and you
feel
should
free
check,
to check
that, out
that out
at, of course, loungegeeks.com, our one of our sister sites.
When are we going to just unify the belts and bring everybody under
hey,
one umbrella?
I'm all for it. It's just Grant going holding his arms and going.
Hey.
I don't think so.
Look, we are a mighty conglomeration of city states.
I am kidding, by the way, yeah. For the record. He didn't literally do that.
Not at all.
Yeah, he just kicked me in the nuts and walked away.
Grant will do that. But, other than that,
he likes a good nut kicking.
Meet.
Yeah, well, we actually got a story in the local, our local big city paper, a well-renowned city paper that has people in it who write for it who are
not like those little towns that have no one writing.
Well, no, but I'm saying it's like people like Marjorie Baumgarten, who write for it, who are listed among the top critics in the world.
We do have some great people working for the Austin Chronicle, and Mark Savlov,
and people like that. They printed a story about our little site, oneofus.net. I'm very, very proud.
Shout out to my homies, Margaret Moser and Tim Stiegel.
As well you should.
Indeed.
But this week, we will be talking about a lot of stuff. Like I said, we're going to have some special guests who were there with those of us who actually made it to San Diego Comic-Con.
Why don't you go fuck yourself?
That would be not both.
Oh, no, I was just saying that's going to be my new segment.
I think that would be a great segment, actually. It's too bad you're a full-time member, because that would be a great correspondent thing. And now, here's Bo Paul with... Why don't you go fuck yourself?
I can record that at home.
Yeah, he'll work it in.
It seems like it's almost inevitable.
I mean, he pretty much does those in the shower.
We should
once a week. So
we never did get allow me to retort going the way that I wanted it to go. Yeah. So.
Well, maybe we should do that at some point on this show. We will see.
We'll see what happens.
Start throwing some questions my way, guys.
And to be fair, this show is indeed in development still.
Yeah.
There's a lot of new stuff happening. And this week, guys, I just want to warn you full on. I know a lot of people really love Jason Murphy is Furious. There will be more Jason Murphy is Furious. This week he's not there. As I've said He's not as mad this week. But the thing is, like, we're going to be developing this, so there's going to be a lot of different commentators with their own unique take on pop culture stuff. And this week, because of the length of our San Diego Comic-Con sequence, we just didn't have time for that.
Right. And, you know, we'll have some people on who like stuff.
We are a
true.
We're a veritable entertainment buffet for you. Every time you come to the Original Gentleman, you will get something new.
A veritable cornucopia.
Veritable plethora.
No, I already use veritable.
Oh,
you
got to
use a different.
No, but plethora is the problem.
No. You're fine with plethora, but you got to use something else besides veritable.
I don't like something about cornucopia. What is that?
I'm going to write dearth on a baseball bat and beat both of you to death if you don't shut up.
I'm uncomfortable with the horn thing. What is that? Is it made of corn? What is that?
It's the horn o' plenty.
Yeah, but what is it made
Which is
of?
Also one of the best Bond villainesses ever.
Horn o' plenty?
Really? Nothing? Nothing?
I don't know.
Fuck you guys.
I mean, it sounds like a Bond
villainess. There's an O Plenty villainess. I just don't remember.
There is Plenty O'Toole.
Plenty O'Toole.
Yes. Okay. I was just saying that Horn O'Plenty would make a great
It would.
Bond
villain. No, absolutely.
And I got nothing.
I'm sorry.
Crickets.
No, you threw us off.
Jesus.
But I acknowledge that it was a good... Anyway,
this gaping wound in my side isn't bleeding at all anymore.
Well, what if
thanks
just,
for assuaging my pain.
Why don't we just move into an official segment to assuage uncomfortableness that seems to be felt across the board and go into news geeks like.
Oh,
okay.
What news do geeks like?
Well, you know what? A lot of people are really excited about talking about. I think really one of the biggest stories of San Diego Comic-Con was the adding of a title to Avengers 2, which I don't think anybody was really expecting. They were like...
Well, yeah, after the big stinger with Thanos...
Yeah.
But to be fair, that's what they've done with all their... I mean, we're getting Captain America, the Winter Soldier. We're getting Thor...
The Dark World.
The elf guy.
Point is that you have to...
They're establishing the trope.
You have to do that with those other films. With Avengers, though, you can just go... Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
It's the Avengers 2.
Yeah. It's called Joss called and get your ass in the seat.
Yeah. It's like, what the hell are you waiting for? What are you, an idiot? You're not going to see this? Avengers 2.
Right. They could re-release the same movie and still pull in $500,000.
Pretty much.
Very true.
$500,000,000.
I was going to say.
Not $500,000. Yeah. But no, Avengers 2 is officially titled Age of Ultron. Now, this has caused a lot of confusion because apparently recently there was...
And outrage.
And there was a Brian...
Outrage?
Well,
a little bit.
Only at first because there was...
From comic book fans.
There was a Brian Michael Bendis...
series recently called
Age of Ultron that was... I have not read it, but apparently it was not generally thought of well.
It's funny because I actually really enjoyed it until it got to the end.
And is typical for Marvel events.
Well, and only because I really enjoyed it, and it's one of those stories that's, you know, this story's been told over and over. You can trace it all the way back to Days of Future Past, where it's like, oh, wow, we live in a dystopian future,
right,
and it sucks, and the only way to fix this is to go back in time and fix that.
Sure, it happens all the time.
and I wasn't even going to read it because it's that same story, but it was done well. There's enough surprises where I was like, you know what? I'm enjoying this, and it's Brian Hitch's art, which I'm totally gay for his art. And I really liked it until he gets to the end where he goes like, okay, well now we fixed it, but how, why don't you read all these other books that spring off from it? I'm like, God damn it.
But here's where the worry comes from as far as, like, you know, the people who read comics and watch movies and are kind of, you know, aware of the tropes. They're going, like, wait a minute, Age of Ultron, so are you going to do this Bendis story, which not only takes place in the future, but also deals heavily with, you know, obviously, the main character, Ultron,
who hasn't been established yet.
Years and years and years and years of history, like, you know, dating back to the 60s with the Avengers. He's, like, one of their first major big bads.
Yeah, right. Dealing back to the original Avengers and the character, of course, Hank Pym, who eventually becomes...
Who was one of the
like, eight different characters.
He's, you know, they did this world, which is... You know, how Marvel posits it is, like, this is actually a world in the Marvel Universe that, you know, exists outside of what we're doing with our comics, but it's still, we still very much consider it a real world. And in this world, Hank Pym, who was Ant-Man, and Giant-Man, and Goliath,
and Yellow Jacket
and Dr. Pym, and then Yellow Jacket again, and then Giant-Man again.
And now he's the Wasp.
Ad infinitum, you know, but a very important founding member was a very important founding member of the Avengers, and they chose not to, you know, they chose not to, to exercise his contract, as it were, on the first Avengers film, which is fine.
It's fine until you go like he's sitting around going like, wait, you pick Hawkeye over me?
I actually am a much bigger fan of Hawkeye than I am of Hank Pym. I'll just say that flat out. But that being said, Hank Pym's storyline more integrates
much more
with
important.
The history of Avengers. Certainly, if for no other reason than the Vision, Ultron, all these things. He's the guy who's the scientist who can do nothing, apparently, but make terrible decisions.
well, it's, you know, even with Ultron, it's like he created Johnny Five, who turned into V'ger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who eventually became Ultron.
He created, like, he basically...
tie all our sci-fi things into one.
He created an AI, you know, and it became super aware, super fast, like, and literally within a day of him inventing it, it was like, oh, you're my father. Wait a minute, I hate my father. And it just kind of remained in this surly teenager mode and decided, like, fuck you, fuck dad, fuck everybody, I'm taking over the world. And that's kind of been the Ultron that we get.
Yeah, who's become sort of the brainiac in some ways.
Right.
They're certainly...
Or at least of the Avengers. He never seems to fight anybody else.
He really is. Yeah. He's crazy. He's got a father complex, and, you know, which is one of his main motivations. And that's kind of the disappointing thing about this news, if there is any disappointing thing. I'm sure it's going to be a good movie, and I'm looking forward to it.
Sure.
But the fact that Joss Whedon has come out and said straight up, yeah, we're not going to have Hank Pym in this movie. Now, the Marvel Universe has already said, we're doing an Ant-Man film. That is happening. Yeah. Hank Pym is in it. Not only is Hank Pym in it,
they actually have not said Hank Pym is in it.
Yeah, they have.
Did they say that?
Yes, they have not said that. They have said concretely, Hank Pym is in it and Scott Lang is in it.
Okay. Ah. Now, I want to offer this here, because one of the things they've said this week is that Captain America is going to be a major hinge film between the first Avengers and the second Avengers that's really going to set up the stuff that happens in the next Avengers.
Nice.
And it's quite obvious, you know, they've got him making out with you know, Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
Black Widow. So, you know, that's obviously, well, that's going to be a major plot.
As well as they have filmed stuff with Hayley Atwell with it as well, which some of the stuff that's going on makes me think there's going to be flashbacks to the past in there, which may very well, as has been supposed before, Hank Pym will be in that movie.
There's no reason it's not included.
As a historical character.
Sure.
As a character in the time of Tony Stark's dad.
Well, that could be speculative. You know, certainly there's this idea that, you know, he invented the Pym particle, and he invented, you know, which is the stuff that makes him shrink and grow to be Giant Man and Ant-Man. And then in the movie of Ant-Man, that you get, you know, him as an elder statesman type guy who, you know, gives this technology to Scott Lang, who becomes Ant-Man. Which, okay, you know, I certainly am not discounting the idea that you can make an interesting story out of that. I'm bummed. I am a Hank Pym fan. I like him, you know, and I love Hawkeye. But, you know, as far as liking Hawkeye better than Hank Pym, I like them both equally. And, you know, Hank Pym gets really shit on in the Marvel Universe.
He does.
Because, you know, at one point they had him hit his wife. And since then, everybody
and to be honest,
has...
Janet Van Dyne was not the best listener.
Oh, God. I'm not even getting into that. Here's the bit.
I'm not going to defend that, like the whole like him hitting his wife, but they always painted her as kind of obnoxious.
Let's not go down this horrible slippery slope.
I'm not defending it.
He should never have hit her.
You should never hit a woman ever.
But
I don't care how
she was. You try not to hit anyone unless you're a superhero and they're a supervillain.
You know, but here's the thing. That was a bad choice on a certain writer's point, but so many writers since have gone back and been like, oh, wow, he's an abusive dick. Let's use that angle. And it's like, right. No.
Stop
for
it.
Years,
let it go.
For years, the Hank Pym thing was, I can't figure out whether I want to be this superhero, and I know I help people that way, or go back to my roots, which is a biochemist, and maybe I can cure a disease. Maybe I can find the cure for cancer. Maybe I can do something even more munificent in that way than I can possibly do as a superhero. Yeah. And that's a great bit. And, you know, it's been completely abandoned for, like, literally... nearly 30 years.
I think that when they first did it, it was like counting on comic book fans to be more mature than they really were. To say like, hey man, people make mistakes.
Right.
Huge mistakes. But look at all the amazing stuff this guy's done. They're like, no, all they can remember is that he hit his wife. You know, it's like, okay.
Well.
Guy's like 2 seconds from curing cancer, but he hit his wife. Okay.
I don't even want to get into that.
I'm going to have to step away from you now.
I'm sorry. I'm just saying, like there's that point that it felt like they were like, they didn't want to make him into a villain. They were trying to explore a human story. And all people could hear was, nope, end of story. Hit his wife. Not willing to discuss this any further.
I can't say that is a completely unfair thing to say.
I can say that there are things that are unforgivable, but there are those points that you go like, really, where's the point that you go like one guy makes one fuck up and then that's the end of the story and that's all he's defined by for the rest of his life.
True.
Despite the amazing fucking shit he did.
You know,
like
Mel Gibson.
You suck one cock.
Not comparable. But that being said, now it's interesting that one of the things they've been saying about the new Avengers is just in the last 2 days is that Hawkeye and Black Widow will be two of the major characters of it.
Wow.
Like, which is great.
I'm totally with. Like, they're like saying they will be much brought to the forefront in this one. A little surprised, especially considering Black Widow is going to be a huge part of Captain America, apparently.
Apparently so.
But you got Scarlett Johansson. I mean, I can't blame you.
Which is weird, because there's not any basis in, you know, regular Marvel comic book land for that at all.
It is funny
she went out with Daredevil for a while, and she went out with Hawkeye for a huge amount of time.
Daredevil dated around.
Yeah.
She probably beat him, you know, twice over, and yet Captain America never hooked up.
Exactly.
Like, and probably,
and it's kind of weird because they got the Peggy Carter storyline in the first movie. And they actually, one of the releases that they'll be coming out with soon, one of the extras is going to be a standalone Peggy Carter, you know, OSS spy story. But it doesn't seem like they're moving on and going to do Agent X / Sharon Carter, who is, you know, would be her ancestor in the 20th century.
I would suggest that if they're going to do Sharon Carter, they're going to develop it in the S.H.I.E.L.D. television show. And they're going to find I suggest that they're going to find a decent actress, one of those ones who's already probably got a television presence to some degree anyway, build her up in the show over a couple seasons, and eventually pull her back into the film storyline.
That'd be a way to do it.
I mean, they've already said that Kobe Smulders will be a reoccurring character on the show. Samuel Jackson will not.
Hey, if anyone's listening out there, my vote for a good Sharon Carter, Laura Prepon. I think she'd be fucking awesome.
You're right.
She's already on Orange is the New Black.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
So, and?
But one last thing before we get off this news. Who do you honestly think Vin Diesel is playing in the Marvel Universe? Because he is playing a character.
I would love it, and I don't want them to go all the way with his storyline, but I think it would be cool. If they're going to do Ultron, I think it would be really awesome if Vin Diesel is
Wonder Man. Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing.
He would be a great Simon Williams.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that they've said about it, or he said about it, was that one of the things attracted to him is that it is the he is the oddest love story that he is involved in. His
oh, well, then he's the Vision.
Is involved in a weird romance. Or Thanos.
Oh, well, he had the voice for Thanos, for sure.
Exactly, because he's also got a very odd love story. But I tend to go back towards the Vision because I go, Scarlet Witch, they've already said for sure is in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they've said Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver
and
are in this
he has played a robot before.
Well, you know, the idea, you know, the Vision was created by Ultron, and in fact, Vision came around, he was introduced in the series before Ultron was revealed. So, you know, would be
Avengers 57.
Very, very, you know, I think the speculation on that is, you know, pretty fair.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to what we're drinking today, because God knows we're drinking.
We're drinking a lot of different things.
That's what the original gentlemen do, but I brought a special bottle of something today that I wanted you guys to try. I had not tried it yet myself. I just read a lot of good stuff about it online, which is from a company called Bridgeport, and it's their Stumptown Tart. Every year they put out a different variety of it. The 2013 version of this adds blueberries to the mix that they have of the traditional stuff they have, which is, I believe, let's take a look at pull up the bottle here, which is blackberries and raspberries, which are all locally grown. And I want to say it's Portland, but I don't have that information right in front of me. What do you guys think? We're all having this here. It's a Belgian style ale using Belgian sugars, but it seems to have like a sort of like it's not a sour as the tart would advertise.
I don't always go for the fruity beers, but this is hitting right on the money by not being sweet, by not being too tart. It's not letting those flavors assert themselves too much and be obnoxious. It lands right in a good sweet spot where I can just drink this anytime, especially on a hot day.
I completely have to disagree. But that's because I like, you know, really, you know, powerful examples of those, the opposite ends of those spectrums. Like, I like really sweet beers and I like really tart beers. You know, like, I love a really good sour beer that, you know, makes me pucker up. And, you know, I like, if I'm drinking a beer that has fruit flavors, I like to distinctly taste that fruit. And this seems to be, it's in the middle of the road, which is a great thing for some people. For me, you know, not so much my bowl of cherries, but I do like the blueberry notes. Definitely, you know, it certainly, I think if I got this really, really cold and it was a really hot day, this would really hit spot.
I am actually going to agree with Bo on this one. I was hoping for something a little bit more sour than this. And I think that if this was a beer that was served in separate bottles, like a six pack of it, you would get like any number of beers that are coming out now that are trying to get that light wheat beer taste mixed with like a fruit flavor, I would probably be like, okay, this is a good thing. But you're paying $9 or $10 for like one bottle of it. And I go, this is not really what it doesn't seem like it's worth the money for that. It's not unique enough for that. That being said, it is nice to be able to sit and savor, to be able to pick out the different notes that are in there. I think that the raspberries come to the front of it more than the blueberries.
I would agree. The raspberries are in the front, but definitely after it's down the pipe, I get the lingering sense of blueberry.
I'm not seeing where you guys are disagreeing with me.
Well, I think that you're liking it.
I think you like it more than we do.
I think you find it, I think you find it more just generally quaffable. I wanted it to be more challenging.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
And no, it's not exactly challenging. It's not a challenging beer.
Yeah, generally, if you're going to bring like a bunch of, you know, if you're going to say, this is tart, and it's got raspberries, and it's got strawberries, and it's got blueberries, and, you know, we throw in a little hops for measure, then I'm like, okay, this should be like inhaling a Buick. And I'm a very experienced craft beer drinker. So, man, bring on the Buick. Let's go. I want to smell the chrome and the paint and the leather seats and the whole fucking thing.
I don't know about that, but it advertises itself as a Belgian style, which means I really expect it to have a certain amount of smack you in the face, you know, right there. And it's like, and it doesn't feel like it's that. It feels like...
Yeah, this kind of goes, hey, how you going? How's it going? And, you know, most you know, Belgian beers, and especially sour beers, I'm used to them going like, hey, motherfucker, let's go.
Now, I'd like to say right now, if you guys are interested in this beer sort of thing and experimenting with beers, you should check out thebeerist.com, I believe, actual website, which is John Rubio from the old League of Extremely Ordinary Gentlemen and Grant Davis from loungegeeks.com, who do a spectacular and much better than we ever could dream of.
They will learn you.
Award-winning.
Award-winning, indeed. Podcast about beers, and you should definitely head that way. way for more stuff. But you know what? It's time for Stuff We Like.
Stuff We Like.
And you know what?
What do we like this week?
Well,
I got two colors for you, and they're orange and fucking black. That's what I fucking like.
You're the one who like made me finally decide to watch this, because everybody's talking about
it, and I feel embarrassed, because generally, I mean, and maybe this is a fault. I think when we think about, you know, geeky stuff, it's stuff that we sniff around in the corners for, and, oh, wow, this is neat, and you know, hey, man, maybe there's even a little hipster angle to that, that this is something that nobody all knows about, and this is something that people are loving. I mean, Netflix has been putting its full force behind this. If you subscribe to Netflix at all, you've probably gotten some email in your mailbox that says, hey, check out Orange is the New Black. But I gotta say, man, wow, this is one of my favorite shows in a long time.
I almost didn't watch this show because somebody wrote me and said, like, oh, Orange is the New Black, it's got your arch enemy on it. And I was like,
is your arch enemy orange?
Well, I was like watching it and I was
like, is that a black thing?
What are you talking about? I realized, oh, he means Jason Biggs. That's what it is. Because I've talked shit about Jason Biggs.
He's perfectly cast.
Well, he is. That's the thing. It's like, I've always said, it's like, look, yeah, I rag on Jason Biggs, but ultimately what I hate is the character that he plays over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he's a nice guy. And here, while this character is similar to those characters,
there's a complexity.
Yes, it's a complexity. And I like it quite a bit. See, I've only seen the first two episodes.
And I've only watched the first three and a half so far. I don't know where you're at.
Watched the whole fucking thing like a starving dog that has been given a can of
Alpa. Is this like House of Cards where they put the whole season
up? The whole thing is up, but you know, I don't know how many episodes House of Cards had, but this is just, it's 13. You can literally,
House of Cards was 13.
Yeah, which I think is a good idea that they're having, because literally,
Sopranos set the standard.
Yeah, you can steam through this motherfucker on a Sunday if you really, really want to.
And the idea being, of course, is that Taylor Schilling plays Piper Chapman, who is somebody who literally 10 some years beforehand was having a lesbian relationship with Lar Prepon, who people remember from, of course, That 70s Show.
That 70s Show, Are You There, Chelsea?
Yeah.
Any
number of different things.
Any
but
number
I would say
things.
That 70s Show is definitely
She's Donna Pacciotti, the hot redhead from the 70s Shows.
But that, like, there was a situation where she was like, okay, well, I need you to carry the suitcase through an airport that was filled with drug money. Taylor Schilling's character Piper knew it was filled with drug money. She knew what the deal was. She did it anyway because she felt like, well, come on, I'm just carrying cash, right? She did it. Seems like everything was okay. End of story. 10 years later, she's getting engaged to
Jason Biggs.
Jason Biggs. Her life is starting where she's making like artisanal
soap. And that's the thing. Here's she is, you know, 10 years away from her like, this is my wild card moment. I'm going to have a lesbian affair and get involved in this drug running scheme and holy shit. And at the point that she's about to get married to Jason Biggs, you know, when all this goes down, she's literally 10 years away from becoming a soccer mom.
Yeah.
No question about it. She is, you know,
about to become boring.
She's like, yeah, she's like, I'm, you know, coming out of like a slight hipster phase, going into let's do some serious fucking nesting, have a couple of kids, make our life in the suburbs with a nice Jewish boy.
And I think that, like, the way, as far as I've watched the show anyway, seems to be like the key that's going on here is watching her character as we're flashing back and forth between, like, you know, what happened way back when, what's happening, like, right before she went to jail, what's happening, like, as she, you know, present day in jail. We're watching this person start to become like a more interesting person again.
Well, she's definitely she. I mean, you know, sometimes the dog does it on the carpet and you shove its face in it. She's having her face shoved into this mirror that prison is. I mean, and she literally, like, in the middle of the season has this incredible monologue on like, this is what this is. You are, you know, just brought up. It, you know, it's not. It's not gangs, it's not violence, it's not drugs, it's not any of the other fucking prison cliches. It's like, this is where you are alone, and this is what you have to deal with, is the smell of your own shit.
Yeah.
Almost quite literally.
Well, it's my understanding this is based on
this is based on a very true story.
True story.
This is actually based on a book that was written by
Piper Kershaw.
I've heard her perform some of these stories.
Piper Kerman.
On The Moth, on NPR. And it's funny because in the first episode when she gets there, they're like, look, this is what happens. It's not like Oz. But when I watch this show, it is very much the female version of Oz. Sure, it's not as wild, and you know,
no.
But it's still
this
very
is not
much.
A, this is not a maximum security prison. This is a federal prison. But it's still, insofar as Oz is about like the relationship between, you know, this group of men, you know, which is sometimes violent, this is definitely that.
Yeah, it's it's that same feeling. Like for the hour that I'm watching this show, I am in prison for that hour.
It's a funnier version of Oz in some ways. It's a lighter version and one that is exploring. Like, I mean, like, you have a bunch of, it's mainly women here. The men are a tiny part of the show, quite frankly, and. It's a completely different environment, as it should be. The different issues that come up, the different problems that come up, and I never feel like it's pandering when it's
no.
With that
although
stuff
you know, it definitely you know, and this is written by the woman, you know, the person who adapted this. And please bear in mind, the memoir that she wrote is vastly different in many ways than the series.
It would have to be.
You know, it's highly dramatized. You know, there's conflicts going on here that did not happen in the book, that did not happen really in prison. But, you know, it does deal with, you know, the idea of this tribalism, which is prevalent in just about any institutional situation. You know, so black people hang out with black people, Hispanic people hang out with Hispanic people, white people hang out with, you know, white people. And then there's like a catch-all others group, you know, which is like, oh, you're old and infirm, or you're Asian, or you're this, or you're that. You're in that corner, and you've kind of got these four, like, little quarter segments that are all, you know, and it's like, oh, well, we have our showers over here, and you have your showers over there, and you share it with the Hispanic girls, and we share it with black girls, and, you know, that's how this is. But there's not the, you know, it's not like, you know, people are playing, you know, poker for drug bitches or anything like that.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know, the main character, Piper Chapman, Taylor Schilling, she is us, the audience. And so much of this show is about being thrown into a hostile environment and having to learn the rules on the fly. And the times that a lot of it's trial and error. And even when you go in and you're told these are the rules, you get in and find out, like, well, those are some of the rules.
They change up
but
the fly.
Yeah, so. Some of the things you told me are complete opposite of what's going on here.
Yeah, she reads a lot of you know, and you know, if you happen to be going to prison, there's lots of resources online that you can explore that says, hey, this is what you do, this is what you don't do, this is how you prepare yourself, don't do this, you know, don't appear like that. You know, make sure this stuff is handled before you go in. And she does all of that stuff. You know, she's very much like, all right, this is what we're doing. You know, I may have, if I lost in court, I could have been in here for 15 years. So fuck that. I'm going to make a deal. I'm doing 15 months. I can do that on my head. I'm reading up what I need to know. I got this.
Yeah, she's been...
And her fiancé at the time, where, like, he drives her to jail and helps her surrender, and he's like, we've got this. You're going to do these 15 months. I'm going to come up here every fucking weekend. We're going to be here. We're going to talk on the phone. We got this.
Yeah, they point out...
And it immediately, completely fucking falls apart.
But they point
apart.
Out early on, because you can't study for a situation that is essentially chaos.
Yeah.
You know, and it's this... The funny thing is, as opposed to Oz, which is the worst case scenario,
oh, absolutely.
Period, sometimes it's the opposite here, where she's like, oh, I thought this was going to be much worse. And just as she's starting to get like, oh, well, there's genuinely nice people here, it goes like, oh, yeah, but you still have to be careful because there's this rule you didn't know about and you just fucked up.
Oh, yeah, that. Or it's like, hey, remember that thing I told you? And, like, you know, you don't make friends. But gosh, you need somebody's help, and so you make a friend, and like, hey, that's not so bad. Oh, wait, on the back end, it actually is bad, and I should have listened to that.
And speaking of that, it's really brought up by some of the supporting characters, and I think that the best one you've got to bring up is Kate Mulgrew, who plays Red, who is the head of the kitchen. She plays, you know, this Kate Mulgrew from Voyager, the captain of Voyager, who play on Star Trek, who plays. You know,
Captain Janeway.
She's a Russian, a matronly woman who's been running the kitchen for a long time. She's got her own story that we find out in the second episode.
Yeah, that's what I just watched.
Oh, just you motherfuckers wait, too.
And she's a boss, but she's not a boss in the way you like. Once again, that you see on Oz or something like that.
Yeah.
She's got, in many ways, much more depth than those characters do. She's like... Like, yeah.
She, I don't know. She was very Aussie in that second episode.
wait your ass.
I will watch the series.
I love her. As you'll be going, the character Crazy Eyes, which I know you're 3 episodes in, she gets cooler and cooler and cooler.
Really?
Oh, my God. Because
the second episode, episode ends with going,
she is such an amazing character. And she,
Uzo Aduba.
Yeah, she's an amazing actress. Like, you know, literally, I guess I was at episode 10 and I was like, who the fuck is this? And like, Googled her. She's on Broadway right now in a huge production of Godspell. You know,
really?
Yeah. Well, see, no, she's an amazing, cool actress. And
so, and that's another
blows
gay,
me away.
Gay by gay.
that's another way. It's like Oz, in that it's given this opportunity for all these great actresses of, you know, different ethnicities.
I will never get a break otherwise. And here, I guess, you know, if any of my, you know, being poo-poos that idea, it's the fact that Oz very much got very cartoonish in, like, his last season.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for those first two seasons, yeah, you're absolutely right. Here's the thing that really just amazes me about this series, and, you know, don't form an angry mob and come kill me, but it reminds me of The Wire in this, that unlike most series that you've got a protagonist, you know, it sets up the situation, and then the protagonist generally makes pretty good choices, and you're like, yes, I like this person, they're a good person, or they're fulfilling their means. You're never sure where anybody lies in this.
True.
The characters are incredibly rich, and sometimes they're fucking amazing people, and sometimes they're dicks, and they're so fucking real because of that.
Yeah.
It's like, because nobody's a fucking superhero, nobody's a supervillain, everybody is, you know, we've got an amazing sense of you know, goodness in us, and we've got the capability of being a total shit.
Now,
this really explores
that. If I have a complaint, only 3.5 episodes in, admittedly, it's that every time they go back to what's going on with Jason Biggs and the stuff in the real world that's currently. I like the flashbacks because they do much like Oz did. Like, here's a story in episode. Like, they center
this
around.
This is what the guy did to get here.
This is what they did to get here, so you understand more who they are. I love that stuff. But when they're doing the stuff like that surrounding Taylor Schilling's character, Piper, I just get bored. I'm like, Jason Biggs is not terribly interesting in this show.
No.
I'm like,
or ever.
Yeah, I'm like, you're not giving me anything that makes me go, why are we even paying attention to what you're doing on the outside of jail?
I would agree with that. You know, and you're right. He's not interesting. But once again, this is the guy who was, you know, he's a nice Jewish boy who's going to marry this nice girl. And 10 years down the road, they're going to be a nice suburban couple.
Yeah.
And I think his arc is a little slower, but the fact that the matter is, it's just like, yeah, he hasn't had to deal with this at all, and it takes a much longer time for him to deal with the reality of this, and it does eventually get to him.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I wanted to, you know, on a typical episode, we talk about a bunch of different stuff, and there's a couple things I know, especially Bo and I, want to talk about here. Like, I know we want to have a Star Trek Next Generation geek out.
Indeed.
But the fact is that the thing that's coming up here, our San Diego Comic-Con segment,
yes,
is going
indeed
to take a lot of time. So I suggest we just move on to questions from fans.
Oh, we got questions.
Yeah, we always have questions here, and I have not actually picked some, although Michael Nassino says, can you guys keep up the awesome? And I think the answer to that
all right, we got to try.
I think we can do that. Eric Dar says, do you guys regret not doing this project sooner? Say, well, it wasn't really an option.
Right, true.
So, yeah, I appreciate you asking, but it's not a matter of regret. But yeah, obviously a lot of people, like, hell, just at Comic-Con, we got to ask so much stuff here. But Javier Vasquez. Sorry, had a few drinks.
Yeah.
Says, what have been your favorite and worst after credit scene for the Marvel movies? For me, worst, Iron Man 3. Favorite, Captain America. I'm going to throw it out right now. The best one I've seen yet was the Wolverine, which is not part of the traditional Marvel universe. It's one of Sony's, but
right.
Wow, what a lead-in to the next X-Men movie. You're like, as Koa said back on Spill, I don't care how you felt about the rest of the movie. That was worse than watching it for.
Well, God damn it. Now I've got to sit through the fucking thing.
It's actually a pretty good movie.
No, that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, yeah. But no, that was probably my favorite out of all of them. Of the stingers.
Huh.
How about you guys?
Huh. It's, you know what, it's so often with these stingers, sometimes like we go to a press screening and they won't even have the stinger attached.
Mm-hmm.
Only about half the time do they. And I do remember with the first Iron Man how there was all that controversy about
we're going to do the fucking Avengers.
Samuel Jackson is Nick Fury. And even they, when they talk to Samuel Jackson, he's like, well, I'm not in it. If they got a character who looks like me, I better get paid for it. Only to find out, like, yes, he did do a stinger in the movie.
Yeah.
And I was at a Comic-Con several years ago, whenever that came out, went to a theater to watch it just for that stinger. And then, yeah, it's like 15 seconds. And I was like, oh, I totally could have waited till that showed up on YouTube.
Yeah.
Which is, so if I miss one, that's what I do now. And I'm sure this guy's answers, you know, all these answers you say are just great. Yeah, that was a great stinger at the end of Wolverine. Unfortunately, I missed it because I had to pee really bad.
Here's the bit. I went to go see Iron Man 1 in the theaters. I did. I actually went to go see the screening, as I recall, with you guys. But I did go back and see it in the theaters, and I saw the stinger, and I was like, wow, they're pretty much doing it. You know, they said the name. Summoned the gods, and they said, hey, let me talk about the Avengers Initiative. And that generated a lot of excitement in me. I was like, wow, you know, I have good sources that say this movie could never happen. And yet,
one of those dead horses?
that was, certainly one of the most exciting for me. As far as my least favorite, probably the one at the end of the Norton Hulk.
I was just going to mention that.
Because it really served no purpose.
It really did. Yeah, I was just going to say
it's
that.
It's just like, oh, wow, it's Thunderbolt Ross. They're going to bring him back. Nope. Oh, wow, it's,
it's Tony Stark talking about building Hulk Busters.
They're going to build a Hulk Buster in there. They're going to go after the Hulk, and that's how they're going to bring him into the Avengers. No. So, yeah, just in sheer story terms, I guess I got to go with those two.
Okay, fair enough. Good answers. I'm going to go with Devane Boyd, who says, simple enough, what are some really good bottle films? Now, I love a good bottle film, and that's defined as a film that basically The Thing would be a good example.
Oh, that was my answer.
In some ways, is a bottle film where you're like, actors, they're trapped in a very specific small place, even though The Thing probably goes a little beyond the traditional definition.
Dude, they're out in the frozen tundra.
They're trapped in a small space, and they have to deal with that small space and whatever ends up happening with it. And this can take a lot of different contexts.
Hands down, it's Alien.
I mean,
because they especially if you watch the later films, it's just like, these things aren't hard to kill. It's just the fact that this thing's filled with acid, and it will literally depressurize
in a small space.
Ship.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And we can't leave. We are literally light years away from help.
I have a new answer, since you already mentioned The Thing. As a movie that's been on my mind lately that we saw just early, was it earlier this year or last year? It's a disaster.
Oh, yeah. Terrific. Yeah, great example.
You know, it's a dirty bomb has gone off, and there's a bunch of hipsters.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever get to see that?
I did not, but I love the premise.
Because I really want you to see it, because I know that you will love it.
I have the DVD.
Well, pony it up, motherfucker.
To loan it to you. I'll give it to you along with Santa Sangre, which is what you meant to do tonight instead of hanging out with us losers. One of my favorites is Closet Land, which I've been talking about for
Never
years.
Heard of this.
It's still not even available on DVD. You can only get it on VHS.
Dang. I have to ask Brian Salisbury.
Yeah, it's a 1991 film that was directed by Radha Bardwaj, an Indian director, starring Alan Rickman and Madeline Stowe, and the idea being that she's a children's storybook writer that was in who knows where country. Like, the idea is a country that everyone assumes has a basic level of human rights, but everybody's a little paranoid about it. Like, things are starting to turn wrong. Could be America.
Oh, that'd
Could
be Greece anywhere. Right now.
Right. And she's abducted in the middle of the night and brought to this one room that is this incredibly designed room. Like, the set design of this is stunning. And Alan Rickman is this interrogator that knows exactly who she is and is trying to say that her children's stories are allegories for revolution against the government.
Jesus.
And that she is intentionally trying to send out messages through them of meeting times and of, like...
Wow, this sounds like the prequel to Death and the Maiden.
And it actually, people say that all the time.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
'Cause this actually came out before Death and the Maiden.
Oh, wow. Well, no, the play... I cannot remember the playwright's name, but the play was around
before.
The 80s. Yeah.
But people always say this is like the film. You watch this, then you watch Death and the Maiden.
Oh, yeah.
It was like the later film.
Totally.
And it's this astonishing film about, you know, like human strength of this thing is when it gets to that point where he is physically torturing her, which is not graphic. She goes into the place in her head that are her children's storybook stories, the real truth, which is this thing that she tried to escape from her childhood. You know, them misinterpreting childhood trauma.
Oh, I see. You're going to get all artsy on my ass.
An amazing closet film that literally carries, that has two characters in the whole film. The only actors in the whole movie, and you're like, edge of your seat.
I love that shit. You know, and an actor that's capable of carrying something like that off, just always... Did you see Frost Nixon? Were you a fan?
Oh, love Frost Nixon.
God, yeah. Man.
So good.
Yeah. So good. Yeah, there's just something about, like, that's one of the reasons Talk Radio with Eric Bogosian, one of my favorite movies, is just like, man, just you know, if you can get somebody that can carry it off. Yeah, and that's another, like, kind of trapped in the Matrix thing.
Well, then just real quick, I would throw in a movie called The Incident, which never made it to DVD.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Oh, I want to say it's from the late 60s or early 70s, and it's Tony Masato and Martin Sheen as these two punks who get on a subway train and terrorize everybody on there for the whole ride.
I got to throw out one just because, and I love this actor, and I can't remember his name. He played a biker in Mask, the stuttering biker guy in Mask who couldn't speak, and he only had like one line. But you know, he's like one of the quintessential, like, hey, you need a tough fat biker guy. This is your dude. He made a movie, it was one of the first movies the Coen brothers wrote, they did not direct, called Pass the Ammo, and it's about this guy, like, he gets out of prison, his mom is ripped off by this evangelical preacher, and so he goes to his, like, you know, church while he's filming an episode and chases everybody out and holds the guy hostage. It is funny as shit.
Oh, wow.
It's one of those, like, little sleeper movies that is quite enjoyable.
I love that there are so many of those out there that the discovery of film just never stops.
Oh, yeah.
There's always going to be those brilliant little things out there that, for whatever reason, even miss the people who, like, scour through shit to see what needs to be re-released.
And it's great. I mean, it's Bill Paxton, Tim Curry, Annie Potts. I mean, and it's just one of those total sleeper movies that, you know... nearly nobody knows about. So, you know, by all means, check it out. I don't even know if it's available on DVD or anything like that, but if you can find it, God bless you. It's a hilarious movie.
Well, Grant Warzona says, what is your favorite sci-fi movie, book, or comic book? What elements of sci-fi interest you the most? And you know, that's, you know, almost an impossible question. There's so many different aspects to it. But I will say that I tend to be attracted to two big things in science fiction, specifically science fiction. One tends to be parallel universe explorations. I tend to, and whether or not that involves time travel as well, that often tends to be a part of it. But like that idea of like, what happened in if something had happened slightly differently? What happens if you could change something? How would that change things? And the other thing is a very philosophical aspect. Blade Runner, being my favorite science fiction movie, is a great example of that, of just saying, what does it mean to be human? Where you really use science fiction to ask a question that is pertinent well outside of that science fiction concept. I think that those are the elements that interest me the most. Blade Runner is certainly my favorite science fiction movie. My favorite sci-fi comic book is actually, believe it or not, still Grimjack after all these years. It's still my favorite sci-fi concept in the comic book, because it's that whole every single parallel universe has this place.
Zenosha is the place where everything meets
they
up.
They all meet together, and Grimjack's a dude whose job is to be an assassin. Yeah. Who deals with stuff and all these parallel universes coming together. So much fun. What about you, Martin?
Favorite science fiction movie?
Or book or comic book? And what elements of sci-fi interest you the most?
Well, the elements that interest me the most are the ones that are pretty much... what are you talking about? They're cautionary tales. You know, there's that whole block of stuff from the 70s that carried over into, you know, Planet of the Apes being the lead of that. And that even, like, Gattaca is a movie I love so much because...
So good.
But it captured that 70s science, sci-fi feel where it's like, yeah, all the science... The science is too tight. But it's also a big warning, like, hey, you know, if you get carried away, this could happen. Something where you look at it, you go like... Like, real science fiction is where you look at it and you go like, yeah, that could happen. As opposed to, you know, making a detective story with laser guns and hovercrafts. It's like,
funny thing is, I'm always mildly irritated on some level by the a lot of the same movies that we both love with that cautionary tale, because it's always like, yeah, science is great and all, but you got to watch it every second. Well, I'm like,
hey, I know. It's not like it's completely harmless like religion.
I'm like, what the fuck, man? We got enough of that day-to-day life without having our sci-fi movies.
We didn't realize we want to have that end, too, of the whole the Luddites and the Bible thumpers holding us back. I don't like the ones where it predicts society all going one way, like take AI for instance, where it's like, well, we'll reach a point where society will just have public hangings of robots and making them fight even though they're sentient, because that's what we'll turn into. I'm like, I don't see that. I mean, yeah, maybe little pockets, but don't paint the entire world with that brush. That,
okay.
As far as comics go, I know, you know what, we've been talking about Saga so much. That's the thing that's mostly on my mind.
All right, Bo.
Well, you stole Blade Runner from me, so I can't say that. But something kind of along the same lines, but I think maybe even more where my heart lies is Children of Men. And you know, I think that's got. You know, I think one of the things I like about a lot of the dystopian stuff there, if you really analyze it, has this message of hope at the end. And, you know, I think Children of Men certainly has that. You know, and it's a very nebulous and a very dark hope, but it's hope. And yeah, sometimes I think that's the best we can do. And, you know, there ain't nothing wrong with that, man. You know, fuck. You got to take your hope draped in a little, you know, dystopian society.
Cynicism.
That's okay. as far as sci-fi books go, hands down, you know, once again, dystopian things. Hands down, it's two things. It's Neuromancer by William Gibson.
Excellent.
Which is, you know, I think a very realistic ideal of where we might be in another 30 to 40 years, especially if we keep behaving abominably to each other. Friday, which is a book by Robert Heinlein, which
I highly
recommend. He doesn't get as, you know, sometimes Heinlein can stop in the middle of a book and go off on a libertarian treatise.
Yes,
and
he can.
Yeah, it's just like, all right, I get it. And this one, not so much. It's a great, action adventure book, you know, but it's also, you know, he was one of the first guys to, you know, it's kind of a proto-cyberpunk book, because he's talking, you know, he talks about, like, there are monitors in every room, and there, you know, you can get onto the nets, and you can research anything, and, you know, at this point in history, America has very much balkanized, and, you know, you've got, like, you know, the California Republic, and the Lone Star Republic, and the Chicago Imperium, and, you know, Quebec is separated from British Canada, and all this stuff, and it's just like, wow, actually, I can see all that shit happening. You know, that, you know, whatever I might think about Heinlein's politics, the man is a very smart man.
Wasn't that kind of a comedy book for him too?
It wasn't. I certainly wouldn't say it's a comedy, but it's the one of the only times, maybe the only time, he wrote a female protagonist and wrote it in first person.
Okay.
You know, it definitely holds up, and there are a lot of things that he says in that book that, like, I took to heart as a kid that still hold up for me. So
I grew up reading sci-fi, and yet one of my favorite sci-fi books, probably my favorite still, is one I came on later, which is Dan Simmons' Hyperion, which still, to me, redefined what science fiction could do in the modern age, and in fact, the structure of storytelling alone. Fascinating book.
I love stuff that goes on a limb. I'm a huge Larry Niven fan.
Oh, yeah.
I love the fact that Larry Niven knows his fucking science, so he can write about, like, hey, what would happen if a star formed a gas torus and it had a bunch of trees in it that people actually lived on, or, you know.
He's hard sci-fi.
You know, Niven is a guy who came up with the idea of the ring world, which is like, well, we probably could never do a Dyson sphere, but what if we just took one big ring and put it around a star?
Yeah, the original ring world book is one of the masterpieces of science fiction reading.
He's got a great collection of short fiction called Neutron Star.
Yeah.
He's also got a one of my favorite short stories. He kind of combined detective fiction and sci-fi. It's called Death by Ecstasy. I think it won the Hugo Award in 1967, 1969, something like that. Awesome, awesome story. Seek it out.
Not to mention Dream Park, which is the huge influence for Jurassic Park.
I'm sorry, I still to this day, I go back and reread Dream Park all the time, and the what is four follow-up novels, I think, to it. The idea being that, like, they've got this holographic technology to a point that people who like to play D&D can go in and do it with, where, like, giant fucking dragons and shit that have, like, you know, hyper-reactive technology where if they swing a sword at it, the technology's aware of where it hit and it reacts appropriately on this hologram. Sign me up!
Yeah. If you get the Star Trek animated series, which Martin was so nice to buy for me many moons ago,
you got enough stuff.
There's a great story, and I cannot remember what they titled it, but in the Star Trek universe, but it's based on a story called The Soft Weapon, and it's really amazing, and it's where they bring in the Kzinti, which are this, like, bipedal feline race.
God bless you.
they're a bipedal feline race that populates, Larry Niven's known universe series of books, but they've actually brought them into Star Trek, and they are actually canon, which is kind of cool. Well, we're checking out. As far as sci-fi comic books, man,
I picked the question that was for Bo.
When Epic Comics was an imprint formed by Marvel in the 80s, which allowed artists to own their own stuff.
Well, it was their attempt to compete with heavy metal.
Yeah, and Archie Goodwin was the editor. I cannot remember who was the writer on this, but one of my favorite series was a series called The Alien Legion.
Frank Sciarocco did the art.
For the first, like, 10 to 15.
I was just telling somebody about this the other day. I cannot remember who was the writer.
It was really good.
I want to say Alan. No,
it's Alan something.
Zelenitz.
You know, yeah. I think that's it. And they did two volumes with however the rights passed from one person to the other, but like three artists, but. Man, well worth checking out. I know there are a couple of trades out there.
Yeah,
and
there are.
Man, you know, it's the idea of, like, you know, this, it's a three galaxies run in conjunction with each other, and, you know, they have kind of a foreign legion, which is their shock troops for anything, you know, weird that happens. And they're kind of a cross between, you know, the Federation and, like, you know, commandos.
Right.
And, man, and they're represented by all of these different races. And one of the cool things they did, especially towards the end of the series, is that they made people that, you know, it wasn't just biped. It was like, oh, this guy's a gas cloud. Oh, you know, this guy is, you know, a small guy who, you know, he's only an inch tall, but he's got a 5-foot power suit that he runs around. Oh, this guy, you know, has three legs and two heads, and one of them is at the bottom. And, you know, they really, like, you know, explore the parameters of,
didn't
oh,
the
this
main
is what an alien
main
looks like.
Commander have a have a snake body.
Yeah, Saragar. He had,
oh, yeah.
You know, he had a you know, basically a human torso with you know, two arms, a head, but his undercarriage was all saurian. You know, he was he moved by the same way snakes move.
Well, I hate to say it.
And he had flexing spikes that came out of his tail, which were awesome.
So many more questions we could answer, but but we've got to move on to bring in our guests who are just standing by the outside here, waiting for us to talk to them as I gesture towards nothing. But, we need to talk to them. We need to talk about San Diego Comic-Con.
I do got to say, though, to Juan Rico, werewolf!
Well, we're back to talk about our main theme this week.
Yes, our grand tradition of me saying "fuck you" for being in when I fucking wasn't. Yay! Hooray for not being at Comic Con.
But think about all the fun you had last year.
And not being at Comic Con, like I said, grand tradition now.
I will say that there was a when was it the year they burned us in effigy? Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that.
Tell me that happened, really.
No, they posted on YouTube.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the show that we used to have on Spill.com called The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Allison Murphy, sweetly, kindly, lovely, we broke out the barbecue pit and lit them on fire.
Yeah, they did.
It was awesome.
And it was awesome. They took a bunch of pictures and video of it, and it was like, okay, guys, that is indeed so funny. I'm not even offended.
That is so cool. I'm not bitter at all about anything.
Why would I be bitter? I got to go to Comic
Con. Well, this was my first one, so every time anybody else went, I was always bitter.
Well, that's why we need to take a minute here to introduce our new friends here, who are here. First off, Michelle, who just spoke. Michelle Williams here. Old friend who's
never introduced a woman in your life.
No,
okay, I gotta say,
do
you still like Michelle?
No, I don't think he does. He got a girlfriend, and so other women, it doesn't matter what he says about
them. I didn't get a chance to finish my sentence.
We're trying to make you not finish because
who looks
not
exactly as she did the day we met her.
Is your oxygen tank okay over there?
Yeah, I'm serious. What's going on?
But you're an original. You were one of the members of The Real Deal around the same time that I was. Like, you came in late like I did.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, we spent a lot of time together. We hung out a lot together. You were one of the core members. You're on the elusive Behind the Real Deal documentary that floats around.
That is very true.
And you knew her back when Martin was middle-aged. Yes.
Thank you for taking the old over back over there.
Yes,
I like that.
If I may back up my silver tongue friend. When they say black doesn't crack, you are the poster child for
Yes, thank you. That's what I was trying to say you guys.
Is it cocoa butter? Is that, do I just need to have cocoa butter?
You need melanin.
Oh, damn it. I'm fucked.
Yeah, you are. You are one of the whitest guys I know.
I might as well go home and bury myself in a peat bog. The sun off of me.
All right, Brendan Gleeson, calm down.
Yeah, if you were any whiter, we could see through you.
Right.
But yes, I'm really pleased you're able to join us. I was so glad to spend time with you at Comic-Con.
Yay, Comic-Con.
So awesome.
Well, it was one thing for Michelle to say, like, hey, I'm going. But she was on the same flight with us.
Yeah, yeah.
That was fun.
That was cool.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Completely unexpected, which was even better.
We were in the airport with our little group being just loud and proud of everything, and everyone's kind of looking at us like, I'm not quite ready to be that guy at Comic-Con.
Right.
Like, whatever, we've been there. Let's just talk about it and have fun. So glad you're able to spend time with us. So glad you were able to be here tonight to talk about your experiences, because I know some of your experiences were very different than the stuff that Martin and I did. As well, we have...
And it's way different than what I did. Which was basically Seethe.
Someday.
In Austin.
Yeah, both.
Someday. Have you never been at all?
Nope.
We're going to make it happen.
We'll do a Kickstarter.
We're
going to
make it happen.
Fucking A, man. First OG Kickstarter is going to be good Bo's ass to San Diego.
I think that's a great idea, actually. Yeah. So, but our other guest tonight is Ashley Moreno, who is now officially a part of oneofus.net already. You guys just didn't know it, because she's on the show Infinite Variations. She plays the part of
They might know
Jane.
It if they listen to it.
Yeah, well, all
they
five
listen,
of them.
They listen to the cast.
But
there were comments.
But that's not all. She's also going to be one of the first of the phase two development of shows that are coming out, where she has her own new show. This is the first time we've really announced it, which is called
Minecrafts.
Can you tell a little bit about what that is?
Yeah. So it's going to be a show with me and my friend Leah Manners, who those of you who are from Austin might know her from the Hip Hop Hooray show.
Oh, Hip Hop Hooray.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay, yeah, great. And so she's one of the DJs on that show on
Sundays. Wait, Miss Manners?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So she is a fabulous knitter, and our show is going to be basically geeky crafts. And so we'll have a few different segments and projects that are related to comic books and video games, sewing, crocheting, things like that, and directions on how you can do it yourself. And we will also have a Minecraft mailbag, where if you have any crafty questions or ideas or challenges, you can send them in to us, and we will do our best to make your geeky dreams come true. Oh,
will you fight creepers?
Nice.
I'm going to keep my address personal.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I meant Minecraft keep creepers, but apparently you were thinking
Well, my experience... experiences, reference like we talked averted. About at Comic-Con, were very different.
But this will be actually be one of the first of our video shows, which you'll be seeing more of that sort of thing coming up on the site.
Would that
well.
Be called vlogging?
Vlogging.
Lady.
That's funny. Actually, I'm kind of working and developing a show with even another website right now that the working title is Vlogging a Dead Horse.
Nice!
I'm very
you know,
proud
it's not even a real website. He just wanted to get that pun in it.
No. It really is a real
no,
thing.
No, wait, do you have real dead horses?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Or, what? I have become death.
I haven't seen you in a while, so.
Whew.
Or is there more formally known?
I just want to see them vlogging and I don't want to do anything creepy to it.
Or is there more sure. formally known hookers?
You stole my idea, you fuck!
Sorry.
No more dead
gotta move
hookers.
Faster. I'm just saying.
Oh, no more dead hookers.
It's the new oneofus.net dead hooker show. Everyone knew it was going to come eventually. They were just surprised that Bo wasn't host of it.
Yes. That's why I signed up.
Immediately. Oh, yeah. I'm not a hooker, so what the hell?
But I mean, if it's going to be a party, I want to be part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
The night is young. The night is young.
The
Thank
only
you,
thing
Bo.
That's not safe is the mashed potatoes. But you know what? We're here to talk about San Diego Comic-Con. I know that we all had very different experiences of it.
Sure.
Especially Bo. But
the non-experience.
I gotta keep just dragging him through the mud on that. I apologize. But you know what? Like, I know that one of the things that really blew me away was the thing that Leon, fuck.
It happened.
It's okay.
Leon is Martin's driver.
They look exactly the same. That Martin,
and he's white.
That Martin hooked me up with, which is going to the Comixology party.
Yeah.
It was really one of those, like, meet your heroes experiences. Because in the past we've gone to, like, the same guy who now is, like, kind of the head of Comixology. Used to be the head of Boom Comics.
Right. My good friend Chip Mosier, I've known him since he was 12 years old. Now he's almost 40. But yeah, he's a marketing manager at Boom Studios before. Now he's the marketing manager over at Comixology,
yeah.
Which is a huge step up for him. And he's coordinating with all these different creators. And they had a big charity event, which was called The Blank Page. It was getting artists together to draw things on a giant jam board and donating whatever proceeds to Fallen Heroes, which is comic artists who were just, you know, down on their luck, the old guys.
Of which there's certainly, sadly, a lot of.
Yes. Because when you're creating comics, nobody's thinking about the money or the future. But yeah, it was a good chance to hang out with a lot of top-notch creators, not to mention free drinks and food.
Oh, man, when I went to the bar and went, like, all right, so I was drinking bourbon and Cokes. Like, I don't know what it was. Whatever. What difference does it make? It's bourbon and some kind of bourbon mixed with Coke, whatever. You assume it's some whale shit. And they're like, I'm sorry, we're out of bourbon. Would you mind a scotch and Coke? I'm like, I don't know. I was like, I don't know. What kind of scotch is it? They're like, Macallan 12 year? I was like, how about you give me a triple on the rocks?
Yeah. And it was that Russian bartender who was there last year, and she was like, okay, sure.
I don't know.
It's Scottish crap.
How did okay. Nothing.
What?
I was like, how did Russians get into this?
Well, that ended up being a long night almost entirely because of that those free Macallans. But that being said,
yeah. It
was a terrific party. Met so many great people, just really influential people in the industry who have always wanted to meet. And somebody like Tim Bradstreet, who, you know, I mean, I like spent like literally most of the party talking to.
That's to put it mildly. He has a new best friend. Tim Bradstreet totally stole him away from me.
He was actually jealous. It was funny.
Yeah, at first it was kind of a joke, and I was like, well, wait a minute now. Not only should I'm the one who should be friends with Tim Bradstreet, but now he's you're better friends with him than you are with me.
We love it. Every time we saw each other, the rest of the con, we're like hugging each other.
It's like when you take a date to a party, and then she leaves with some other guy, and you're like, what the hell just happened?
At the end, when I left, it was all tearful and shit. It was weird.
Aww.
It was. Well, you told me about how every time you were somewhere, he was running up to you. Oh, Chris, hey, give me your address. When I come to Austin, we can hang out. And oh, here's some more of my books. Oh, let me introduce you to Thomas Jane. You got to come to my place.
Well, I did not get to meet Thomas Jane. He did not do any of that.
Yeah,
not from lack of trying.
No, it wasn't. He was never trying to introduce me to Thomas Jane. And I was not trying to get introduced to Thomas Jane, who is apparently his best friend. You know,
well, his old best friend.
That won't last.
Right. You're the new best friend.
I mean, I only got to talk to him when you walked away, and then he and I talked about internet porn for a little bit.
Well, the funny thing is, like,
it turns out we have a similar taste, not in what we like, but just in like our ratio of story per slamming it sexy. So we're like, hey, you know, we want some setup in there. Don't want to just jump right into it. We talked about that for quite a bit.
Is this what porn's doing now? Right. They actually have story?
Because
I thought that was like a woman thing. That's like we liked like softcore porn where there's some sort of story there. Now,
look,
now all the men are like sensitive and you guys need story now?
No, we want story too.
When I want to watch a lady get fisted in the ass, I want to be a little emotionally invested in it.
I see.
We don't want to just know that she's being fisted in the ass. We want to know why she's being fisted in the ass.
Why is the pizza boy there in the first place?
Exactly.
There's no pizza.
I want a scenario to kind of lead me into it so I can buy into it. So, because the whole thing of it just happening on the spot, that never happens.
So
maybe she says, you know, hey, I lost my keys. Could you help me look?
Right. So porn's got a lot more sensitive now. Is that what you're saying?
Certainly got depth.
For the win.
Yeah.
Like,
back to my corner.
I think there's a difference between sensitive and as he jokes, depth. We do like a little story.
I mean, look, every man's different. You know, some just want to cut to the chase. Yes, Michelle.
Sorry.
I hate to break the illusion, but yes, we are all different.
Okay.
But that being said, I did not have the porn discussion with them.
You missed out.
Now I'm a little jealous. I want to have that discussion.
You're a greedy motherfucker. I want it all with the porn discussion cherry on top.
No, we're just like, I mean, we like all this, where we're talking about like all the secret behind the scenes stuff on the Walking Dead set. Because like, what's his name? Frank Darabont's one of his best friends as well. And he's like, oh man, I know all that background shit. I can tell you what. And then, but it all started because we bonded over the show Hannibal.
That's right.
It was like, I think Hannibal's the best new show on TV. I think it's fucking amazing art. And we got to this point where we're just like building it up and up and up until we're like, yeah, man, fuck the Mona Lisa. Let's just put a Hannibal on that.
Yeah, I don't know the show, obviously. I'm like, yeah, what?
Just big fans where it was like, okay, we're really bonding on that. And that led to the sort of like, wow, we feel the same way about a lot of stuff about art. And just kept going from that. It ended up in a conversation where it was even like people he's known for 15 years. Like, hey, good to see you. Go away. All right. Now, anyways, wow. I was saying.
Yeah.
So there you go, kids. If you go to Comic-Con, make sure you like Hannibal.
Anyway, and the weirdest thing is that I was like not entirely clear who Bradstreet was when I met him.
Oh,
I was like, I knew
that's
about
that's one of those things where I have to like pull you aside and go, okay, look, you did this, you did the covers for the Punisher.
No, I knew about the Punisher covers, but that was about it. And then I was like reading through his book that I ended up buying, his collection of his art. I was like, oh my god, like looking at all this stuff, I'm like, wow, this is stuff I've loved over the years. Hell, I actually bought the Vampire the Masquerade like books only because of the artwork in it. And it was him.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, I don't have anything to compete with that. But while you were, you know, making out with Tim Bradstreet in the corner, I was talking to Dave Gibbons for quite a while.
Nice.
And that was great talking to him about him switching to digital, working with the Cintiq about how he wanted to buy a Wacom tablet. But in England, they cost more, even though it's an American thing. Like, he was like, wait, shouldn't it work the opposite way? And they were like, sorry. He's like, well, you know, if you give me one or if you give me one at a discount, I can probably promote it. And they were like, well,
who the fuck are you?
Yeah, who the fuck are you? And he's like, I'm Dave Gibbons. Google me. And it's,
Did he say bitch after that?
He said it with his eyes.
he probably would have, but they like picked the phone right back up again so quickly. Like,
Mr. Gibbons, what can we do for you?
Yes, pretty much.
Let us ship you one of our top-of-the-line products. Toot sweet.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it went. And he did an online, it's on YouTube. You see this great tutorial he does. And it has sold so many. Like, I know so many people. And he himself says, like, I don't know why they call that program that you work with at Manga Studio, because you can use it for comics. And he's the guy who makes you go like, oh yeah, it's not just for Japanese art. You can do American comics pretty good. He talked to me quite a bit about what a angry drunk Glenn Fabry is. And
to no one's great surprise.
But he's like, Steve Dillon's the opposite, where he's a happy drunk and you love hanging out with him.
Sure.
But Glenn Fabry is one.
Although he will shoot somebody in the head just to study, do the character study. Apparently, look, the teeth came out right at an angle.
Glenn Fabry can be angry, and he confronted him about it one time when he wasn't as drunk and said, like, hey, man, you're always kind of prickly to me. What's going on? Oh, no, it's nothing. It's fine. And then later that night after he got drunk, some big dude comes over to him and goes, like, listen, your buddy over there, Glenn Fabry, paid me to beat you up. I'm not going to do this.
What?
I just want you to know.
Wow.
No, it's nothing.
Well, the thing is, like, we both got a chance to talk to some people that we're both, you know, very influenced by.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, like, in my bad, we ended up leaving early to go to the Insidious party.
I was just like, let's not go
the
to
Insidious
that.
2 party, which was, like, fucking lame. I'm sorry.
It was Insidious 2, the experience.
Yeah.
And I got to be aware anything that was the experience. And just to let you know,
I was about to say, I know I've never been to a Comic-Con, but I can tell you from experience, anything that says the experience isn't.
Yeah.
And shouldn't be.
Yeah. Agreed.
I mean, you know, we took a very expensive pedicab.
Oh my God. Ride. I've never taken one before. I had no idea they required your firstborn soul.
Yeah, it's funny because
I just beat it at the end. He's got to be tuckered out.
It's my fault. I said to you, get us a cab. I want to go take photos of this thing.
And you pointed at the pedicab that was sitting
I just meant like over there because that's like where a cab
and
stand
it was.
Was.
Like, okay.
And I come back and you're like, I got us a pedicab. And I'm like,
why?
Oh no.
The one you pointed at.
Yeah.
But you said you liked horses. You lied to me.
So
you lied to me.
So $50 and 6 blocks later.
What?
Not even kidding.
Not even kidding.
Wow.
And they didn't even have an iron throne on the damn thing.
And there were those that were awesome.
Yeah, and they had the one with Archer hanging off the back
of
it.
Yes. Like some of those that have the advertisements, like the Archer one, a lot of those are free.
Yeah.
You know, and some will even say it on there, but you could ask if they like if they're heavily, you know, covered in ads. It's a free ride, not ours. But it was what 45 minutes of standing in line to wait to get into Insidious 2: The Experience, which is going into a house that's decorated somewhat like a haunted house,
somewhat
with a red lights
in the most half-ass way.
In the most half-ass way.
I think this was actually advertised on, like, you know, one of the BuzzFeed little things.
Oh, it was
one of the worst things to do at Comic-Con.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Yes. So we offered crab puffs and chicken skewers, and
to be fair, the coconut shrimp was amazing.
$50. And that's what you can say.
Yeah.
$50.
Yeah. Right? No. You win, but I'm just saying, it wasn't a complete loss. And, you know, Cargill, you know, Chris Cargill, the guy used to be on Spill and now is the writer of Sinister and stuff. The Jason Blum, who is, the director or producer of Insidious 2, was there. He's like, oh, you've got to meet him. He's such a nice guy. You got to meet him. And he was. He was a nice enough guy. He was just really surrounded by people who were trying to get his attention. But we met his girlfriend, who couldn't have been more awesome. Do
you
remember
his girlfriend?
Sung Yi, or something like that?
I don't know if she's his girlfriend.
Is she, like, cheating on Woody Allen? I mean, what's that?
No, that's
Sung Yi.
Come on.
Okay, my bad.
Don't Jesus. Be like
next,
that.
Next is to throw the silverware on the ground.
Don't moan. Sung Yi's like 40 now. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know for sure she was his girlfriend. I got the impression that she was, but she worked. She definitely works for him.
She works in the promotion.
And she was awesome.
Because that's what girlfriends do.
And she has the biggest crush on Cargill I've ever seen somebody have.
Yeah, she really did. She's like, Cargill's awesome. Here's all the things about Cargill.
Like, if I was his wife, I would be worried.
Good God!
Really?
Saying that?
No,
what?
Seriously.
This is being recorded for possibly.
Right! And you know his wife.
I said this to him.
No. I'm not
worried about him hearing it.
She has nothing to be worried about because I've never met anyone more devoted to his wife than Cargill.
True.
That's true.
Absolutely.
No, that's true.
Which is why Sung Yi would have to poison her.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It'd be some Game of Thrones shit.
Yeah, exactly.
For that. But the thing is, we've been, you know, you like looking at me like, what are we doing here? And I was like, you're right. I felt more than anything like Baggis Cargill was so like, you gotta meet this guy, he's my friend.
Yeah.
He was like, okay, so we have to go to this. I was like, all right, let's get the fuck out of here. We were like, let's go back to the hotel and hope something is still going on. And sure enough, it was.
Even though
right at the door, you get stopped by a Spill fan who goes, hey man. Why didn't you like Pacific Rim?
Oh, God!
And I was like,
wow.
I was like, I'm going to the bathroom. I have to get the fuck out of here.
I'd just be like, oh, is that the impression you got? I loved it. I gotta go.
It could just as well have been Pacific Rim Con for me, because that's all anybody wanted to talk about all weekend.
I noticed you kept getting hit with it. Yeah. It was worse than The Dark Knight. Or Inception, I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah. Say, yeah. I like The Dark Knight.
I was about to ask about that. Dark Knight is pretty sweet.
No.
Okay,
we're cool. He had I didn't hate Inception, I just didn't love it as much as everybody else. And everyone's like, why do you hate Inception?
Well, you do hate a lot of shit.
Well, they were.
And when I say hate, I mean you have some legitimate problems with your storyline.
Yeah.
When we got back
you thought about it just a second, and so
yeah, that was enough. Sorry,
why you gotta go thinking, man? Just watch The Pretty Light.
Exactly.
Thrown under the Inception bus.
Oh yeah,
that's what happens. But we got back to the party, which was the boom party. By that point, everybody was there. Ended up, at least I did. You were talking to arguing with a Spill fan. I was like, I'm having a great time. We ended up sitting outside talking with Paul Jenkins.
Oh shit. I completely forgot about that. Oh my god.
Talk about where he's like.
So it's cool. You're hanging out with Paul Jenkins, and it's great. He's talking about Superman, about how, you know, the problem with Superman is that people just don't know how to write him. It's like, yeah, I know, man, right? He said, yeah. I mean, I wrote a story that they just wouldn't let me do. Oh, that sucks. Because I bet you could tear it up.
Paul Jenkins' ideas for Superman are horrible.
Oh, yeah. Yes, they are.
They're so horrible. Yeah, did you read that article that he wrote when he said, oh, this is why I'm not working for DC anymore? He was like, yeah, I would have ripped his arm off and taken away his powers and, you know, made him a communist.
He was like, well, you have to weaken him. So I would have somebody kidnap his parents and hold them hostage.
And kill them in front of him.
Yes, exactly.
Like, what the fuck are
and
you it was
just like smiling.
About?
And as soon as we walk away, I looked at Chris and I was like, he must never write Superman.
He couldn't have been nicer.
Oh yeah.
His article where he talks about that stuff, he makes some incredibly valid points about, you know, how DC it's completely, you know, controlled by the editors now, and editors are doing the writing, and they're, you know, squashing creative control left and right, and making a complete hash out of it. And then he's just like, man, if I had Superman, I'd do some incredible things with him. And you're like, fucking A, man. That's all right. What would you do? And then, like, you know, the horror spills forth from his mouth. Like, no! No, you should never do that.
That's horrible.
An editor should beat you up.
This is why they're not letting you write Superman.
Right, exactly.
I was tempted to toss him off a balcony just to make sure that would never
happen. Yeah, no, Randy was just like, you know, if Jeff Johns or Paul Levitz wrote that article, it'd be a big fucking deal. But when Jenkins wrote it, everybody's like, because he put his ideas in the fucking article, and everybody was just like, you make some good points.
I hate the fact that we're sitting there talking to him, and it's prefaced by a lot of like really cool kind of bonding. Wow, Paul Jenkins is a great guy. Really like him a lot. Such a nice person. He's really funny and very affable. And then he starts going into this, and we're just sitting there politely smiling.
Wow,
I'm like,
fuck that guy.
Looking over at Martin going, see, like, what the fuck is happening?
If you assholes would listen to Loose Cannon Comics. And Martin's on the goddamn thing.
I just told.
Pay attention!
I just joined 2 episodes ago.
I didn't know.
I didn't know.
Michelle, why don't you tell us a little bit about what your San Diego Comic Con
experience
was like?
Holy crap! Out of nowhere, hi. Wow, this is my first Comic Con, so I had the only expectations I really had was there's going to be really huge crowds, so please just be aware of the fact that there's going to be really huge crowds. There's going to be long lines if you want to get into a panel. And that's really all that everybody kept telling me. So I went in going, you know what? I've been to different sort of festivals. I've been to different cons and things like that. It's like, whatever, dude. And it's like, I've done South by Southwest year after year after year. Whatever, crowds and whatever. It doesn't matter.
Not even comparable, is it?
Surprisingly, because of the role that I would play, outside of, past Real Deal and all that sort of thing, the things that I used to do with all these other cons was so much more stressful than sitting in a goddamn line.
Really?
You know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like I was producing a whole show, like setting up interviews and this and that, and going to parties to get more interviews, and having to stay up late nights to watch stuff, to do interviews and all this sort of thing. It's like, sitting in a line, and that's really all that I have to look forward to? Bliss. I was so looking forward to Comic-Con. I'm, listening to everybody, yeah, I got this.
So, comic
I got this.
Comic tip number two, and remember, the comic tip number one, like Hannibal a lot. Comic-Con tip number two is produce your own convention before going there.
Exactly. It's like, do something else that has much more stress than standing in a line, and then you're okay.
Hey, just so before you get on the bus, go tell your parents you're gay.
Everything and Comic-Con is a breeze. It's a breeze. It's beautiful. So basically,
I made sure I'd appreciate Comic-Con by cutting off my own nipples first.
I just see all that as like, oh, it's like Black Friday, except in the end, you don't walk away with a TV. You just saw something that everybody at home got to see on the internet by the time you left the room.
See, that's there, the part, man. I didn't know. That really is the part I didn't know.
You that in the airport.
Yeah.
But she wasn't listening. She's like,
no, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I'm looking
forward
to seeing celebrities.
It was still so shiny for me. It was so shiny.
And by that, I mean a football field away.
It was still so shiny for me.
Like,
hey, don't ruin it for
Hall H is like the fucking Astrodome.
See, that's the thing that I didn't do. Anything about Hall H. Okay.
Because if you go
never.
In, what is it, Ballroom A or whatever it is?
20. Ballroom 20.
Yeah, it's not anywhere near as bad.
It's not near as bad, but it's still kind of bad.
And there's even much smaller rooms. Like, if you're going to go to, like, the Marvel panel and stuff like that, they're actually in reasonably sized rooms.
Yeah.
You're like,
don't go to Ballroom Z, though, because that's where the quickening happens.
And you have to be the only one.
If you survive the experience, you can be in all the rooms at once.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of good stuff in Ballroom 20.
Yeah, so I guess I got there on Wednesday. I walked the exhibit floor and saw what was to come. You know, it's like, okay, here's the whole convention center. This is all the stuff, the Hasbro stuff, the Mattel stuff, the Lucasfilm, Dark Horse. You know, it's like, and I'm picking and choosing, of course. And I was thinking, this is awesome, this is great, but the crowds weren't that bad, because it was preview night, so I was like, cool. And I was looking forward to seeing, like, little stuff, like Psych, you know, the Psych the Musical coming up, and then the next morning was Psych.
Little stuff.
And Psych panel at Nerd HQ, and I ended up spending a lot of time at Nerd HQ. I was kind of biding my time between both things, because I knew about both things. And so my whole experience wasn't Comic-Con. I was wanting to spend some time over at Nerd HQ because Zachary Levi, like, I guess this was his third year doing Nerd HQ, which is a free thing that you don't have to be involved in Comic-Con to get involved
with. Where does that take place?
This year it was at the ball field. It was over at the Padre Stadium.
Yeah, they always have, like, tons of stuff going on.
Yeah, and it was so cool. So I was like, you know, if I'm not up to, like, doing a bunch of stuff and like standing in line for hours and hours and hours, I can go over to Nerd HQ and cool stuff will happen. And they have tickets for panels, and they have panels of their own.
Yeah.
Which, and they were giving stuff to charity, you know, the panels that you did have to pay for the panels. So if you didn't go to Comic-Con and just wanted to do Nerd HQ, you pay for your panels, you get your tickets and all that sort of thing. But the panels were really intimate and really small and awesome.
Yeah.
So I was like, so I did kind of half and half, and I have to thank my friend Marion for providing some of that mitigation, because she knew about Nerd HQ from the last year. And so we did some of that and some of Comic-Con. And so I was kind of splitting my time between Comic-Con and Nerd HQ. And it was a very well-rounded experience. I really had a great time.
But what about the crazy shit that happened?
There was no crazy. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, really?
Oh,
we're gonna ask your boyfriend to leave the room for 5 minutes, and then
there he goes.
Put his fingers in his ears. Okay, go.
Oh, cool. All
right.
You're not talking about what happened at Subway, are you?
No.
Okay.
Yes, we are.
What happened at Subway?
I don't even know.
Actually, I don't even remember what happened at Subway.
I do remember looking over, like, do you need to be rescued?
Was there a thing with Subway?
Okay. No. Here's what it is with me with cons in general. My experiences outside the panels and things like that seem to be my richest experiences. I'm not saying that the panels are bad or anything like that, but, you know, when you go into a panel and you're kind of getting talked to about an experience, because these people are having an experience. They're on a set. They're doing their thing. And you hear this and you're like, that sounds like it's awesome. I'm so glad to hear about your awesome time. I want to have my awesome time.
Sure.
Yeah.
So So the stuff that happens for me outside of the con and outside of the panels is what I was really, truly looking for.
Ah.
And so I was hoping to meet people like Aisha Tyler. I'm going to put it right out there. God, I wanted to meet her.
You told us that from the get-go.
That was like my huge thing. And that was it.
To her booth when she wasn't there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I never saw her. Yeah. I never even laid eyes on her.
Showed up.
I'm sure she did.
I think the only...
I followed her on Twitter, and I know she was there.
This is the first year at the only... Like, I really only talked to one major, like, you know, acting celebrity, which was Brent Spiner, and that's only because David Duchovny had just shown up at the autograph booth.
Yeah.
So everyone went rah, 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 over to David Duchovny, and he was just sitting there bored, and I was like...
And that's how he was at his panel. I went to the 20th anniversary of X-Files, and we waited in line to go ahead and go see that. And... It was him and a bunch of writers and Gillian Anderson.
No, I don't mean David Duchovny was bored. I mean Brent Spiner was bored. Because everybody left to go talk to David Duchovny. And it was like, talked to him for a while. I was like, hey, what's going on, man? Okay. Got to that point where he's like, you going to spend some money or what? It's like, all right, I'll see you later. You know what I mean, though? It's like, hey, man, nobody's talking to you. You're just sitting here, like, literally staring at the fucking, like, space in front of you. I'm like, hey, what's going on?
Yeah, but I almost had the cracks counted, and then you came over and started talking.
Exactly.
Well, here's the funny thing that happened after the 20th anniversary panel, which I did go to for X-Files. What ended up happening as they were leaving, the exiting song, because they actually have music, at least in Ballroom 20. I don't know what they do in Hall H, but they have music going on before the panels and after the panels. And
in Hall H, they have a choir of angels come down
probably,
and actually sing in your ears.
Which I don't get to experience because I'm not willing to wait in that line. I'm not willing to camp out. I can't. I can't. Anyway, the first song that came on right after the X-Files thing ended was Britney Spears' Womanizer. Oh. It was hilarious.
Was that aimed at Duchovny?
I was about to say.
I think so. Oh. And I think it was absolutely friggin' hilarious. And he has a great sense of humor.
His show Californication is all about that.
Right.
His failed marriage is about that, too.
Yes, exactly. So I hope that he took it with a grain of salt because he does have a great sense of humor. But I was walking out of there kind of giggling, going, I hope he gets this because this is funny as hell.
You'd never know if he did because he would just be completely
Michelle was standing next to him and going, you like to do it a lot.
You blame all your feelings on doing it, don't you?
Picture David Duchovny laughing like, oh yeah. Yeah, that's funny.
But it's still being completely hilarious because he's deadpan like that. Yeah, he's completely dry and it's funny as hell.
Yeah, it is.
One of the great experiences I had outside of panel was going to the Spill.com party.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was actually a whole trauma in and of itself. And I don't even know why I thought, considering the time I spent on the show and everything, why I thought that it wouldn't be a drama. Because it was.
But
it was
were there people
drama.
Like fucking in front of each
but
other?
But it doesn't matter.
Or anything
it
like
doesn't
that.
Matter where whether you guys brought the drama, whether the drama was brought by the crew, the drama exists. It happens.
It happens.
It follows you
bad
guys.
Bad planning is what happened.
Well, we have a
chaos
engine.
Oh, good God. And all I kept saying along the way is like, if I planned this party, this wouldn't be happening. You know, it's like, if I was still on the show, this wouldn't be happening.
I think Spill.com is written by Grant Morrison.
I think you're right. But you know what? Ashley, let's talk to you for a little bit about what happened to you during this because I literally don't know. I saw you at the Spill.com party.
Oh, yeah.
I saw
see
you
her.
Briefly at the booth. You
I
came
know.
By to say hi.
Yeah.
But I really have no idea outside of the fact that you were staying at a hostel, which I know, having done it myself,
oh,
is
that
an
must
adventure
have been interesting.
Yeah, it's
in
itchy.
And of itself.
Yeah.
It's itchy.
It's itchy.
Show us
the
on this
bed bugs were there.
Show us on this architectural model where the convention touched you.
Here,
which
here,
was just
and
weird.
Here.
I mean, I didn't even say no. I was just surprised that's what they went for.
Wow.
That was so on the nose there.
Oh. It's funny because she pointed at her nose.
I yeah. really did.
I'm just trying to point out that she pointed at her nose because we're not on video. So.
Yeah.
And if I have to use a pun to do it, I'll do it. I'm not
yeah,
afraid.
Was,
yeah, I know, Chris.
Radio.
You like to do it.
I had no choice.
I resisted, but I guess.
You never resist,
no
Chris.
You're correct.
If my gesture led to a pun, then my work here is done, sirs.
I like this
no
one.
No more needs
welcome
sad.
To oneofus.net.
Shut the fuck up, Ashley.
You're just mad because you didn't go.
Boom! Oh, no, boom!
Oh, that's not the only reason I'm mad.
Fair. Anyways.
Not anymore, anyway.
Maybe the con will touch you when you go.
Probably.
Yeah. It's not that
it
bad.
To.
Just close your eyes.
It
and
does.
Picture you're somewhere else.
Oh, God.
The truth is that I was so excited to go. I had never been before, so I ran around like a fangirl getting signatures from all my favorite comic book artists.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. So
who's your favorite?
Well, my recent favorite, two favorites. Longtime favorite is Sam Keith, and so I've been following where to I can get signatures from him, and I did get his art book, and it is signed, and he drew me a little grumpy guy and everything.
Aww.
And I was so stoked. And I really couldn't talk to him, although he asked me how I was doing, and I said, fine, I think. And I was also super excited. I had been stalking him on Twitter for the week leading up to Comic-Con, which he may or may not have found creepy. Jeff Lemire, who does Sweet Tooth.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I love Sweet Tooth.
So amazing.
Brilliant. And I love the art in it, and I love the shift midway
through. Can you talk
through.
Real briefly about what the story is of Sweet Tooth for our fans out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So
antlers.
There are antlers, which is a big interest of mine in general.
Understand.
No, then you like Saga.
You know what? I haven't read Saga yet.
No, come on. If you like antlers, you need to read
back
Saga.
Back to Sweet Tooth.
Sorry. We're getting sidetracked. Yeah. He was there, too, Bo, doing signings, but you need a ticket.
No, of course
yeah, you he's just jealous because he didn't go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sidetracking.
Are you just now noticing this?
I'm filled with rage over deeper issues than that. So, you know, watch
it. And since this is the only time that I was ever able to express any of this, it's like I probably would have been the same way, Bo. So I commiserate.
Hey,
I commiserate.
He's going to get to go.
I'm pleased to be your interlocutor.
You know, all you need is a ticket. It's not actually that.
And plane fare and a job that will allow me to do that.
And, right. Michelle, you had to win a lottery to get your ticket, right?
I did. Mm. It was like you go on the site, and I hadn't been before, so I got my little membership and all that sort of thing, and so I went in like at the time that they said you're supposed to go in. It's like okay, and then the crash happened on the site. Nothing was going on. I was like okay, the timer wasn't going down. Nothing was going on. I'm like oh my God, what am I supposed to do with this? Since this was my first time, because I know that. Some of the people that have been before, they got pre-registration online. So all my friends didn't have to worry about anything. And I'm like fangirl going, please,
come on,
please, wait, let's do this. And what the instruction said was, don't hit reload. And I was like, I can't hit reload. And the timer wasn't going. And I'm like, I can't do it. And then I just was like, you know what? I haven't got all this time. I'm hit and reload. And I hit it. And then all of a sudden...
Congratulations! You didn't fall for a cheap ploy.
Exactly. And that's
did you also win an iPad?
Was that available?
I think it was.
Oh,
it
gosh.
Was, yeah.
See, I missed out on the iPad, but okay. I got all the days plus the preview night. And when I started looking online after, they were on the Facebook for the Comic-Con, and they were saying stuff like, wow, I waited in line and all this sort of thing, and a lot of people jumped in front of me because they hit reload, and I only got one day where all these people just got in front of me and got 4 days and all this sort of thing, because we followed the rules.
And you were like, I know, those guys are such dicks.
That's so complicated.
No, what's weird is that I'm such a rule follower. I want to go, but it's like, what are the rules? I will follow the rules and I will be the good soldier and I will do that. But it was just so crazy that I just decided, it's just like, I haven't been in all these years anyway. Fuck it.
Yeah, prison.
Boom. It's just like, I don't even fucking care anymore. Because
Michelle
shivved
the internet.
I did. I was just like,
in
why?
In the shower.
I don't know about
and
that.
And I was coming
yeah.
off of like this whole
just,
like weird
I just,
depression.
I just opened my email and it went, here's your tickets and where you're staying.
Yeah, I just work professionally.
Can I kill you guys right now? Can I kill you?
That's easy for me. Wow, it must be hard to get tickets that easily with all those balls in your face.
Right.
It is, actually. You can't see the tickets for all the balls.
And I was,
but
I was,
speaking of balls in the face, Ashley, you want to tell us?
Funny story.
Did you have balls in the face?
I know. Well, funny story. I got the plus one because my boyfriend is a programmer on DC Universe, so that's how I got my ticket.
Yeah, so still pre-registration?
Yeah, it was pre-registration.
God damn it, my video game makes more money than that fucking place.
But when are you going to start having sex with the comic book creator? I keep trying to tell you. Like, somewhere, like, I'm sure that, like, what's her, Gail Simone is somewhere out there going, I'm ready for an affair. I don't know about you.
Someone wants a handy. It's just a handy.
Handy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Okay. Bo's open to a handy.
I think we come down to the fact that Bo's just not trying
email
hard enough.
The original gentleman, because Bo's up for a handy.
I'm sorry, I should continue.
I'll call Mark Evanier immediately.
So Sweet Tooth is this comic book that I have been reading. And you too. Yeah, it's great. So the plot is that it's a post-apocalyptic world where disease is, of course, killing off all of humanity, and the only people who are immune are the children that were born after this disease kind of took hold, and they are animal people hybrid. And so the main character, Gus, hands up in the air, and some of them are so cute, and some of them are not, but a lot of them are really cute.
They are a little adorable. The main character is kind of adorable.
Gus is so endearing. He's a dear boy person.
Yeah.
Dear boy?
Antlers.
Antlers.
Yeah, that's what I say. So is that where the antlers come in?
He's not like the hallucination on Hannibal, who is not adorable.
And he is not the Lord of the Wild Hunt, either.
No, he is definitely not that.
But he does have a sweet tooth. He loves chocolate.
Yes.
And there's something very
special. Thus the name.
Oh, spoiler. Thus the name. And there are few things I love as much as when a comic book or movie says the name of the comic book or the movie in the comic book or movie.
Yeah. That moment that they turn.
That is why we must be called the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Well, yes, love. You gotta get these motherfucking snakes off my motherfucking plane.
Do you know who agrees with you? The original gentleman.
And you shall be called the Fellowship of the Ring. Was that line in the book? Shut up. They're saying it now.
I'm still following you. As long as that music's going on in the background, who gives a shit? thanks, Bo. I need a Kleenex. all right, so tell us about the best thing that happened to you, the moment that made your brain go, oh my god, this just happened!
And it's not the time you gave the handy to Mark Evanier.
No.
No, that
is my story.
That was you, Bo.
It was also lackluster at best, so definitely not making any lists.
It was more of a fingery.
Well, actually, so I would say two things. One is that I was stalking, trying to figure out what tickets I needed to get to Jeff Lemire's signing. It turns out none. And there were only three nerd boys in front of me with like a stack of each issue of comics that he has done.
Always a classy move at the comic convention, guys.
Yeah, didn't even have him out of the plastic. And so he's sitting there like, okay, great. And so when I walked up with my like trade paperback, I was like,
he said, oh, a girl!
And by the way, anybody listening to this, bringing a stack of anything to any comic convention is bad form.
Yeah.
If you do it at San Diego Comic Convention, you deserve to get, like, you know, that thing where the skinhead makes you bite the curb and they stomp your fucking head in. That's what should happen to you.
Can I bring one? Can I bring one and not a stack?
Actually, I think...
A handful. You can bring five. You can bring six. Okay, but bring like, yes, I brought Anthology. Raw 1 through 100. Yeah. Can you sign all of them?
Every single issue.
Or multiple copies of the same issue. Because it's like, clearly you want to sell these. Should I just make them out to eBay?
Right. See, here's what ended up happening to me, and not to undercut what you're talking about. I went to Comic-Con, and I had a friend that couldn't go to Comic-Con, so I was like, hi, I know you can't go to Comic-Con, and I know you've done a lot of great things for me. I'm not even going to talk about what those things were, but I know you've done a lot of great...
Were you talking to Mark Evanier?
Do you need something signed at Comic-Con? So, before I ever went, I didn't know what kind of commitment that was going to take to get something signed for somebody else at Comic-Con. And I go to his house, and he's got like 1,600 comics. And he's like, okay, let me look through this thing, and I'm just going to look through, and I'm going to find like four comics.
If that ever happens to you, you just need to immediately start going, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, until they bring you three things. All right, we're done.
I took four. I took four. Okay.
That's
and
per-
I was,
perfectly
and then, fine. And then I said...
Although you dug your grave.
Yeah. I did.
It's like, why wasn't that shit ready before you even got there? It's like, just hand me the shit.
Dude,
you.
People can't even get up to the fucking counter at Starbucks and know what they fucking want.
True.
That shit is confusing. Yeah. They have different names for things that they invented. Yeah. How am I supposed to know that shit?
Oh my fucking god.
It's really? All the tall, yes. The venti, yeah.
The grande.
And I
just
want a fucking
coffee. I don't even
coffee.
Go there.
I don't care what you... Like, just get coffee. Well, all we have is...
I should not have to suffer a deficiency of caffeine because you assholes can't speak Italian.
Hang on. No, hang on. Here's the deal. A macchiato is an actual coffee beverage. It is espresso, and then they put a little foam milk on top, and then they put a little droplet of caramel, but it's Starbucks. If you order one of those, you're going to get, like, this giant, like, milky thing.
18,000 calorie.
That's why you shouldn't go to Starbucks.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, that's why
fair
I never
point.
Do. Yeah. So, anyway.
Or
so.
You should order an Americano like a normal fucking person.
That's fair.
Do they even serve just coffee anymore at Starbucks? But anyway, I'm
sort
sorry.
Of, sort of.
I hate to sound like a Joe Rogan comedy routine.
Exactly. Go to Dunkin' Donuts, okay?
But I hear they have great coffee.
They do?
Dunkin'. There you go.
Dunkin' Donuts is great coffee.
So he
did
gave
we switch topics at some point.
Sweet tooth.
Sweet tooth.
Oh yes. Okay. So, anyways, by the time I get up to the line behind the three other people that it turns out I was trying to get tickets in front of, he drew me a whole picture of Gus in the front of my book and everything.
That's
it was
awesome.
Super awesome. So that was super great. The Venture Brothers panel, Doc Hammer and Jackson Pollock were hilarious. I did get in, and they were so good. Blew my mind. And there was one little moment that is somewhat Comic-Con related that blew my mind. I thought was really adorable, which I think kind of captures, I think, the good spirit of Comic-Con for folks who haven't been before.
Let me remind you before you say anything else that what happens at Comic-Con in some instances stays at Comic-Con.
Ah, yeah.
The good spirit of Comic-Con is actually the ghost of Jack Kirby. He comes up to you with a cigar in his mouth and says, come with me, kid.
It's like Geek Vegas is what I was calling
it. Yeah, yeah. And it turns out everything behind him is just a curtain. It's been a backdrop.
It's true, though, Martin. It's Geek
we
Vegas.
We lost Martin. That was adorable. He's totally tickled.
Hey, you not getting laid here stays here.
No one has to know that you just failed miserably with every attempt that you made.
The piercing gaze you gave Adrienne Curry is gonna stay in this room and in your heart.
The girl dressed up like Dr. Girlfriend never even noticed that you were trying to make eye contact with her for an hour and a half.
Oh, dude, that girl, her fucking Ant-Man costume was the fucking dope.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus
oh, yeah,
Christ.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
sorry.
Please, unrelated.
So, as you're walking around Comic-Con, you quickly realize that there's a lot of great costumes, and then there's a
fantastic
lot of
fantastic costumes.
Amazing. Oh, and then a lot that'll make you go, ugh. Like, I found out that sexy Ewoks, and I'm saying,
oh,
no,
don't ever say that again.
It's a thing.
Oh, it's a thing.
No,
it's not.
No,
yes.
It's not.
Yes.
No,
yes.
It is not a thing.
Yeah, you have been.
Yeah, I'm with you,
Bob.
Yeah, yeah, it's a
everything's
thing.
Everything's possible.
Yeah,
no,
like everything they say about quantum physics. Oh,
no.
It's there.
Yeah,
no,
it really is.
Everything is possible. Yeah, string theory in action. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
So you saw the sexy Ewoks.
Yeah. So for every sexy Ewok I saw, a little bit of me on the inside died until
there you
as
go.
I'm walking the floor trying to like go buy some Mondo poster I wanted or something like that. I look and out of the corner of my eye, I see it's clearly a dad who's there with his two kids, and there's this little boy who's maybe 7 or 8 dressed as Iron Man.
Yeah.
And they're in some
cute
long line to get tickets, something signed, and they have fortunately gotten to the portion of the line that's next to a plug. And he has out, the father does, a glue gun and is repairing the Iron Man wig on, like, his 7-year-old son's super badass Iron Man outfit.
It happens.
It's adorable. The forethought.
Some of the kids there were the cutest thing.
Oh, I know.
We had that one... who's like came up.
Boy.
One of the Spider-Man one is the one that cracks me up. It comes up. He's like, so I want to know anyway about the Justice League movie, which clearly is happening, and just starts just rambling a million miles a minute. And we see his little sister, and he's already tiny, like doing that, like putting her hand up to the side of her mouth, like trying not to let him know he's something. So we can't hear what she's saying. Like, what's going
Dial
on?
Dial it back,
and
dude.
And finally, his parents like kind of palm away. He's like, he's got really severe Asperger's. He's adorable.
He's just like 65% of this audience.
But then there was the kid with the Wolverine outfit who was just wearing the simplest of all things. They like basic Wolverine, like grab the grip claws.
Right.
With the white beater. Glue on like a giant bushy, mutton chops. We were like, I'm sorry, that's fucking adorable. You went out like, I'm taking a picture of that.
Yeah. You need to pull that whole costume together, kid? A cigar.
And so the antithesis of that, I saw every bad version of Batman and Wolverine. It's like saw a fat Wolverine. Did you see that guy?
There's so many Wolverines.
It was like he had like a beer gut and he had the wife beater on his and he had the claws and he's like, ah, and I'm like, and people were taking pictures and I'm like, what? Anymore.
What do you want?
The funniest thing I saw.
I'm just like, is that appropriate?
The funniest
is that
thing
cool?
I saw with bad costume like that, where it's like, you're just not the right guy to wear this outfit.
Right.
It was like, there was a whole group of people who came as like original X-Men with like the old style full body.
They were all
fat.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, as if that X-Men comic had never evolved to other stuff. It was just like, those guys are in their 50s now. And they're
the first, the original five, they graduated on. So. Yeah.
Dude, all of us have been in Halloween costumes that we cannot point a fucking finger at these guys.
You know, Xavier, he had to get some new recruits, you know, to school.
Maybe you guys.
You get more students. But some are just scrubs.
The best Comic-Con outfit experience that we personally experienced was something I wasn't there for, where you took a picture of that guy with an amazing Walter White
costume. I think I saw that guy.
Well, that's the thing. I'm there at the booth, and
Was he the guy wearing the molded Walter White head?
Yeah, and I go like,
you do know there's like a 95% chance that was
No, it's more of 100%.
Yeah. No. There was no other those masks.
Yeah, they weren't. So. They weren't. You see him walking up. I see him walking up, and I look over to Tony. I'm like, that's the most incredible. It's like Tom Cruise Mission Impossible. Grade of mask where it looks like human flesh. The only way you can tell it's a mask is that it's slightly bigger than a human head, but I mean slightly, like microns. And I see it, I'm impressed, but the thing that really impressed me is like, man, that guy has, he has Bryan Cranston's walk down. and like down to the costume and just his gait. And I was like, I gotta take a picture of this. And I'm like right up in his face taking the picture. He stops and poses for me. And it wasn't until after I posed, everybody's like, you know, it was really Bryan Cranston. I was like, no, it's a mask. Oh, shit, it really was him.
Yeah, of all people to be like so close yet so
That's
far.
Awesome.
For you, who turned all of us on to Breaking Bad.
Right.
You're the guy who was like, you really got to watch this fucking show.
That is so awesome.
I know.
And I was on the other side again. It's like I always end up on the antithesis of everything that everybody else is experiencing. I ended up taking a bunch of photos and a bunch of video of people in the damn Jane hat from Serenity.
Sure.
Oh, my God. There was one booth that was selling Jane hats. And so everybody got lazy and started wearing the Jane hat so that they were like, I'm Jane. And so I started taking video of all of these, as much as I could find, every Jane hat that I could find. And I was thinking I was going to call it 50 Shades of Jane and put it on YouTube. And once I put it all together and everything like that,
your fugue state ended and you realized what you had gotten yourself into.
No, if I had really been able to get 50, that would have been awesome. I only got 27, but there was 27 Janes.
How many?
And they were all just like lazy people.
At the convention?
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
8 million.
Eight bazillion people. Wise. But these were the.
That's like, you know, getting mad at people for buying Mickey Mouse ears at Disney World and saying, you ain't Mickey Mouse, bitch.
That's a whole other discussion I had in line. That's a whole other thing. Yeah, because
Fuck them people in Mickey Mouse here.
Good God. There was a girl that was in line of me when I was going into Ballroom 20 for the X-Files thing, and she had the R2-D2 mouse ears.
Okay.
And,
Kingdom Hearts.
Exactly.
All right. Well,
Disney owns it all.
Yes, yeah, I know. Fair. And I said, and I happened to say out loud in line to a friend of mine.
Oh, good.
I know. It's...
So these are like 3-hour lines, guys.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. Like,
please,
yeah,
please tell me you said bitch be fronting.
Did you see that fucking bitch?
I'm not that bad.
It was like orange is the new black all of a sudden there.
I'm not that black. I'm not that orange.
I don't know. I was in a line to room 52 and all of a sudden I'm in a prison shower.
Right. I don't know what happened. No, all I said was, you know, I don't know how I feel about the whole fusion of Disney and Star Wars.
Oh my God.
That's all I said. That's all I said.
You are not that black, are you?
Oh my God.
Are you really going to sit there and say, like, that's all I said? That's picking a fight.
I don't see where I went wrong.
I don't understand this.
Because you're at Comic-Con. There are people who, like, that's their whole life.
I know.
Like, they've been waiting their whole lives for the moment where Disney bought Star Wars.
And I had seen something on YouTube not too long, right before Comic-Con, where Chewbacca, the Ewoks, and some stormtroopers were, like, dancing at some Disney World thing.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it flashed me back to, like, the Christmas episode of Star Wars. And I was just like, this is wrong!
You cheapen the spirit of the pure thing that Star... Oh, what the... I can't even get to that funny shit. What the fuck are you kidding me?
But I was just like, I don't know if I feel comfortable with this whole thing.
I don't know if I feel comfortable with those two movies that made me feel pretty cool.
But
it's like somebody wearing white after Labor Day.
Exactly how it is.
Is it?
And it's not that taboo yet. It still is a thing. You know, it's that whole thing.
Yes, and no, it is exactly like wearing white after Labor Day because no one in their right mind cares anymore.
Exactly.
Taboo D2.
Taboo D2. Very nice.
All right, I'll give it up
The guy behind me was like, you understand this is like the best deal that Lucas could have made because, you know, he wants it to go on and who's going to let
it
go on? And I wanted to so badly.
I'm on the side of like it's the best thing that could happen because now Lucas has nothing to do with the Star Wars universe anymore.
I am too. I just wanted to
fight. That too, yeah, and I have my problems with that.
Yeah, exactly.
I have my problems with that too, but when I see stormtroopers dancing, I can't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I hear you.
I honestly just can't. I walked around and saw so many things that were, hey, it's the Boba Fett version of this. And I'm like, all right,
yes.
I'm done.
It's the
Boba Fett Evil Knievel. Like,
no.
Something, I'd be like, oh, cool, Evil Knievel.
That being
Boba
said,
Fett Evil Knievel?
I saw a Spider-Man in a suit, but yet wearing a Waldo shirt and hat. And Harry Potter glasses.
It's all mashups.
It's like this mashup thing. And I'm like, what the frick is that supposed to be?
Thanks to like T-Fury, it's all about mashups now. But yeah, I admit, I like the occasional Boba Fett. There were quite a few that I saw. I was like, I don't even know what you actually look like. But, you know, nice torso. So
I'm okay with that. I'm
not hating on that. Anyway, we've got to wrap this segment up. So last thoughts, you guys. Let's start with Ashley. With last thoughts.
Let's see, last thoughts. The next time I go to Comic-Con and Christians with Signs try to hand me a free comic, I'm going to know it's just the New Testament, not even illustrated.
Okay. Michelle?
Last thoughts. My first one was awesome, and the next time I go, I'm still not going to do the Hall H thing. I don't even care. I'm just not going to do it. The experience of meeting people and happening upon cool people along the way, including people that write for, that draw for like Marvel Comics and Dark Horse and things like that, that you just kind of stumble upon. Those experiences and the parties, even the free parties, are really freaking cool. And that's what I'm going to probably focus on the next time.
Martin?
You know what? Michelle's got it down. It's amazing that you learned that just from your first Comic-Con.
Like, yeah, it takes two.
A lot. Comic-Con is one of those things where the fewer expectations you have, the more fun you can have. The less you try to adhere to a rigid schedule, the more fun you can just experience. Just, you know, just go around and do stuff. And maybe see the city one day and hang out at some cool bars. We went to this amazing little divey bar that was just a wall of scotch. And
so amazing. So,
yeah, it was unbelievable.
Oh, my God. I don't even know what the Glamorangi special edition we had, but it had, like, tangerine and walnut and all the shit. And we were all like, what the fuck is this? So good. And I'll say my last thought is, you know what? Like, there, you're going to see celebrities anywhere you go there.
But oh, yeah.
If you're focusing on the parties that you know celebrities are going to be at, those are the ones that are going to suck.
Right.
They're going to be too loud. There'll be people in line for it. Those guys are not going to be... If you encounter celebrities on the floor or some other weird, like after-hours thing that just happens, then that's when it's going to be awesome. But if you go to the party where you know they're going to be at...
It's going to suck.
Yeah, it's going to suck. I mean,
The line will wrap the building. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'll get in, it'll be too loud.
You might do things like, oh, we went to this party. We got to see Weezer. That's great. Okay, you could have seen Weezer back home. But,
and been just as far away.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, all right, so if you wanted to do that, that's fine. It was fun. Hey, I saw Weezer near the guys who are on the Walking Dead TV show. That makes you happy. That's great. Okay, but that being said, you know, follow the smaller guys. Follow the guys who are like, that you're really, really, really like, that are like, not like followed by the masses, because those are the guys who are going to spend time with you or are happy to have you there.
I will even give you people a tip that I should not do.
Uh-oh, here we go. Oh,
please do.
After the con, say around 9 or so, there's the Hilton and the...
Why are you...
No, stop. Stop. I'm not going to allow this I want it. Okay. I want
it. Too many people. All
right. No, all right. I'm not going to allow this.
All right. Okay. If you guys tell me to shut up, I'm going to shut up.
That's like Fight Club, man.
No,
So, Bo, what about you?
All you guys can go fuck yourself.
You can stay in my room next time, Bo.
Well, thank you so much, Ashley and Michelle, for coming on.
Yeah, they were great.
Yeah, no doubt. Yep. I really appreciate you guys letting us know you're the other side of it. The side that...
We should replace you two with girls. What?
Anyway.
You just like went into Area 53. I was like, wait, I can be a sexy lady?
It's certainly true that a lot of shows are helped by the replacement of like overweight men with sexy girls. But it ain't happening here, Bo.
You mean every show in history?
You know what? It's time for our song break. It's time for one of the things. You know, this is
what we're singing?
No.
Yay! Kumbaya! Yay!
Is that the song you would pick, really?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Because it's Martin's time.
You goddamn right it is.
That's right.
Because after 2 weeks of you guys with your proto-punk bands, I'd like for people to know, like, hey, some of us listen to other things.
Yes, well, you know, it's about time for, like, some nice, easy-listening jazz.
I was going to pick that.
But I suspect that's not what you're picking.
No, although I was listening to that earlier today.
so old.
A little girl from Ipanema.
No.
I'd be talking shit about the girl from Ipanema.
I love that song.
No, that was Dionne Warwick he was doing. Okay. Say a little prayer.
A little Stan Getz.
Yes. That's true. My pick for this week is the very unlikely artist of Terrence Trent D'Arby.
Oh my God. Yes. I remember him.
Yes. He's one of those guys from, there you go, Wishing Well from, I want to say 1987. I just remember like.
Something like that. Or
88. It was back when
It was 89. And
was it 89?
I think it was before that. He came out with, like, you know, this very rocking soul album. And everybody was like, holy shit, this is incredible. And then they started interviewing him, and they're like, wow, Mr. D'Arby, you're really doing some fucking amazing shit. And he's like, yeah, I am. And I am the best fucking thing that's ever fucking happened to music ever. And everybody was like, oh.
1987, okay. For the record, is when that came out.
Yeah, because it was during the time, this was a pivotal time in my life, because I just moved to Austin. I started working at Bergstrom Air Force Base in the electronics department, and I just discovered compact discs.
I didn't even know you could do that without being actually in the Air Force.
You can't. I knew a guy who knew somebody who got me a
lied and got you papers.
Yeah, yeah. No, normally it is only.
So you're like an illegal immigrant in a way.
In his own way.
To the point where there were only like 5 people who were my age group in there, and I rode the bus with like one of the guys who they discovered was shoplifting. And so, just as a precaution, they decided to fire me too. Which at the point when they busted for shoplifting, I was as shocked as anybody.
There's a little bit of thieving going on. Well, I'm afraid we're going to fire you. Oh, and fire the black guy too.
No, I was going to say, pretty much. You are black.
Yeah, so, no, it was all that.
I mean, this is like the fucking Air Force in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, they'd be a little bit more like,
not at all.
No, black people steal things.
Yeah. So, his first album was Introducing the Hardline, and the big songs.
According to.
So, yeah, yes. Yes, that's right. Sign Your Name. Wishing Well and all that.
Oh, it was a great.
It was a great album.
Terrific. What a debut.
And you're absolutely right about like, wow, he was such a phenomenon until he opened his mouth and had this whole persona saying like, this is the most important album ever come out since. He said it was the most important album since Sgt. Pepper.
He made Prince look like the meekest fucking entertainer on the face of the planet. And you're just like, dude, shut up. Just go with it.
Ruining it.
Well, he had a Rolling Stone interview where he said, and he worked out his logic. He was like, well, okay, if Michael Jackson is Elvis and Bruce Springsteen is Bob Dylan and Prince is Little Richard, I'm Jerry Lee Lewis. And he went, okay, I suppose.
Why can't you just make albums and shut the fuck up?
Well, it wasn't enough that he didn't just shut the fuck up. Like when he would go on appearances, like on different shows, he would bring that ultra arrogance with him. It was almost like he was playing a character like Dice Clay or something to that point. But it really turned people off to where so many people went, fuck that guy.
So to the point that he actually created an alternate persona to make later albums.
That came way later on.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, that point that people were like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Well, I remember I guess probably 4 years later, 5 years later, and this was like, you know, this was before grunge hit, definitely. You know, I was maybe listening to, like, you know, some Sinead O'Connor. I was listening to the Pixies. You know, I was listening to a lot of these, like, kind of proto-alternative bands. And he came out with a album called Neither Fish Nor Flesh. And it was fucking awesome.
That gets to my point. It's like everybody wrote him off after his first album because of what an ass he was. But, yeah, he had the next album. I think that one was Neither Fish Nor Flesh, which is once you got past the first 2 or 3 songs, it was an amazing album.
Oh man, I thought, you know, fucking all the whole fucking thing.
His next album was Monasterio, another brilliant album all the way through. Now, Symphony of Damn, sorry, yeah, Monasterio was the first album single. Now, the track I'm bringing up is from his fourth album. Which, you know, there's plenty of people who thought he's probably only had the one. But Vibrator. This was an album that was just incredible from top to bottom. Where it's like, wow, he hit this new peak. And it's just sad, like, nobody is hearing this. Because every song is amazing. Now, he has a song on the second track on it. It's Supermodel Sandwich. All about trying to have a threesome with models, of course. But then he comes back with this redux. The song I'm introducing is Supermodel Sandwich with Cheese. And it
sounds good. What is better than a supermodel three-way
with cheese? That's what's better.
With cheese.
That's actually better.
There is actually if you listen to his fifth album, he's got Supermodel Baconator.
Actually,
and
it's
fucking awesome.
There was some years after this when
it's doubling down.
It's doubling down.
Where he bought his unreleased stuff and released an album, and I finally got to hear that, and it's like, oh, I totally lost it. But this album right here, this fourth one, is the pinnacle of his creative peak, and that song is what I wanted to bring to everybody because, man, it's such a great funky groove song that even you two guys would love.
I didn't know we could bring old songs, and I thought we just had to bring in new songs that sounded like old songs.
To be fair, at the time, you know, Introducing the Hardline, according to, was retro at the time at 87.
Absolutely.
It was Otis Redding.
It was very much like, you know, what if Otis Redding had, like, access to synthesizers,
right,
and boom, you got it. And yeah, he had like, you know, those kind of like, you know, kind of that dread page boy hairstyle, and Yeah, dude, I remember when he came out, and I was just like, oh, dude, this is the second coming of Soul, man. Yeah. I've been waiting for this shit, and if he had just shut the fuck up, we could have had some good fucking Soul music the first half of the night.
That's the shame of it. It's like exactly what we're saying is, like, he ruined it by his own persona.
Oh, God.
And yet that didn't change the fact that he was still putting out great music.
Oh, yeah.
It was just everyone was like, don't want to hear it. You're being a dick.
And to be fair, if he had been white, he probably would have stuck around a lot longer because of Liam Gallagher, the same fucking thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Not wrong.
And he, Oasis lasted for, like, you know, 5 to 6 years with them saying, yeah, we're the reincarnation of the Beatles. No, you're not.
Honestly.
You're decent. You make good music.
When
but
they
no.
said that, I refused to take them seriously.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Five years after that. Yeah. I was like, oh, go.
Yeah, you can suck
yourself.
My cock.
Well, and if they had stopped there, that would have been fine. But they took it upon themselves to insult everybody.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what?
Including themselves.
The point is that, like, on this show, and as far as I'm concerned, everybody should be concerned about ultimately what the artists present, not what they're saying on the outside. And so this track is called
Supermodel Sandwich with Cheese.
Okay, and we're gonna. This is from the album Vibrator.
Wait a minute, what do they call that in France?
This is from the album Vibrator by Terrence Trent D'Arby.
Oh, Supermodel Royale.
Pour fromage.
Let's take a listen to
Avec fromage.
Avec fromage.
Let's take a listen to a bit of the song, and if you guys like this, there's going to be a link to not only buy I don't know, if, honestly, right now doing this, I don't know if Amazon has a separate link to buy the song separately, but at the very least, there'll be a chance to buy the song. If you like The Original Gentleman, if you love what we do, then please click on these links, click on our Amazon links. It does nothing but help the site and The Original Gentleman.
And by God, the poor schmuck needs some money.
And I stand by this whole album.
Wait, do you mean us or Terrence Van
Darby? Pretty much all of us.
Either, yeah.
Thank you.
I feel like Cindy Crawford and Linda Evangelista just like gave each other a big hug, and then fractals started spinning off of them into the ether, which is not necessarily a bad thing at all.
I would like to add plus cheese.
Plus cheese.
and then, you know, somebody from craft services gave me a hamburger.
And the thing is, that song, it's sort of like an alternative version to the second track, which is more of a traditional rock style song.
But this one is a little more mellow, a little more like, it's got the groove that feels good.
This was definitely taking me back to the mid-90s, which is like, I know I'm getting old because I'm missing that period so much more in my life. I'm like, yeah, that was pretty cool, man. We weren't always plugged into the computer, and we didn't have a computer. I'd just go out and occasionally I'd have sex and have human interaction.
That was a long time ago.
You
could talk to people's eyes instead of their eyelids as they're looking down at their iPhones.
Well, you know what? We're reaching the end of the show, but here's a segment that we have not done yet, and it's one of the things we always talk that we want to do when it's a worthy reason to do it, and it's the RIP, the rest in peace segment, for somebody we really respect and love. And one of these things, and this week it's for Dennis Farina, who just died this week. For me, he is always going to be Ray Bones Barboni in Get Shorty. As you yourself, Bo, quoted on your Facebook.
Oh no, that quote was from Snatch.
No, it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't in Snatch.
Yes, no, are you serious? Yes, he was. Yeah,
he was very, very much so.
Yeah, he had the big like, "Don't you're go right. to England." Line.
No, you're right. You're right. He was that whole. That's
you have anything to declare?
You have anything to declare? Yeah,
to declare? Don't go to fucking England.
No, you're right. My mistake.
You know, cup of tea. But Crohn's, Skellers, fucking England. Mary Poppins.
For me, it's always the character he played in Midnight Run.
Yeah, that was my first.
Jimmy
like,
Serrano.
Yeah.
Jimmy Serrano. And to an
come
extent,
on, sit down. Drink some milk. Eat a fucking sandwich.
Drink some milk. Eat a
fucking
sandwich. Fucking
thing.
And yeah, like, he kind of first came into like my consciousness. He did a TV series. Which
was it Police?
I forgot. Crime Story.
Crime Story. That
which
was
fucking amazing.
I forgot about Crime Story.
Yeah, Del Shannon did the theme song.
Yeah,
it was
like this modern reinterpretation of The Untouchables.
Right.
And it was fucking awesome.
It was.
And, you know, he played one of the leads. And, you know, here's the thing about Dennis Farina. Dennis Farina actually was a fucking, like, hardcore motherfucking cop from Chicago, like, you know, trenches motherfucker, you know, and God knows what he did.
Right.
And he had a troubled life after that, though. I mean, like, he had deals with like, there was a big thing where he got arrested for having a gun at, like, he took on a plane. They're like, what the fuck? He's like, I literally forgot I had it. And they're like, dude, that gun's not even registered.
But he was being honest because he's literally like, I carried one of these around for 30 years. And let's be fair, he carried two or three because he was a Chicago cop.
Right.
I'm quite used to having a gun on my ankle. I literally forgot about it.
It's entirely possible that like it was one of those guns. This is my favorite gun. I totally forgot that no one ever registered.
It's just like, oh, this is my drop piece.
Right.
You mean I got to get rid of that?
But he was a very talented character.
Oh, man. Yeah. Just a complete find because, you know, he's one of these guys like, you know, Jerry Doyle, the guy who plays Garibaldi on Babylon 5, who, you know, used to be the stockbroker guy, who's like, and you know, I've made some money. I'm comfortable. Let's try this acting thing, and got into it, and you know, never stopped going. And he like Dennis Farina is not a nuanced actor. Let's not make any bones about that at all. He is a character.
Bones about
but goddamn
that?
It, like, so is Humphrey Bogart,
like Ray Bones Barbone. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, I forgot that he played, you know, the role that Lawrence Fishburne has on Hannibal. He was Jack Crawford in Manhunter.
Yes, he was.
And he was perfectly cast as Wildcat in the Justice League animated series.
So good.
Well, you know what?
So good.
I just want to say, Dennis Farina, we salute you wherever you've gone on to. Good travels, my friend.
Cheers, cheers.
Good yes. travels. But that brings us to the end of this
oh,
episode.
Oh, no.
Of the original. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, like, well, like, so you're going to be that way, huh?
Yes, now, and I was ready to do another hour or two.
All of a sudden, Martin is like, oh, really?
It's not. I just got my second win, motherfucker.
It's not 3 in the morning. No. We have to say goodbye to you guys. You know what? I'm the best thing in my life right now is doing the show with you guys. I'm so happy to be able to do this.
That is the most unutterably depressing thing I've ever heard in my life.
I know, and yet true.
And yet true.
And I'm super excited about what happens next. We've got a lot of stuff on the way. There's so many things right now that are percolating that are going to make the show just even better. I don't even know where to start.
Oh my God, I'm exhausted just thinking about it.
I know. It's yeah. just happening right now.
I can't wait till we get done with this episode so we can start trying to figure out what those things are.
You know, we can kill this motherfucker right now.
Or you could
put
just
an end to all this work.
Go to sleep. I don't know. Go to sleep.
Shh, shh, shh. Oh, we should choke him out. He's just like, shh, shh.
Only OG dreams.
Don't fight it.
Don't fight it.
I'm not fighting it. It's the end of the episode. Good night.